You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order. They're out of order.
You are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
Oh, right. To call you stupid would be an insult to stupid people.
It's an inanimate fucking object.
You're an inanimate fucking object.
What are your qualifications?
Ah, well, I attended Juilliard. I'm a graduate of the Harvard Business School. I travel quite extensively. I lived through the Black Plague, and I had a pretty good time during that. I've seen The Exorcist about 167 times, and it keeps getting funnier every single time I see it. Not to mention the fact that you're talking to a dead guy. Now, what do you think? You think I'm qualified?
Is this true?
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Loser.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
You're listening to PlayStation Pop's Great Debate, a spirited discussion forum covering topics in the world of movies, music, television, sports, and pop culture. And now, here is your host, Andy Atherton.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another episode of The Great Debate here on the PTPN Pop Feed. I'm your host, Andy Atherton, and this is a landmark episode for a few reasons. One, we're here to talk about sports, and well, there's nothing really going on, but we can still talk about it. Also, this is our 10th episode of The Great Debate. Actually, it's been a bunch of milestones for me lately. I just passed the 20th episode of Laughing Theater, and also, I just had the 10th episode of Year in Pop. And speaking of Year in Pop, I'm going to bring in my co-host as one of my guests tonight. He also is the co-host of the Place to Be Nation podcast over on the Mothership, as well as The Main Event and many other great, fine shows. Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you, my friend?
Mr. Atherton, I almost forgot what you look like.
That's a good thing for you, I guess.
Always a pleasure, Andy. And was I on the first Great Debate? I think I'm usually... When anybody debuts me on their first episode, I think I'm usually the first and the 10th. So I think this is kind of a serendipitous thing for me.
I don't remember. I think you were on, I think it took you six episodes to get on this. Every other show of mine you've been on.
That is true. Anyway, it's good to be here. I'm pumped because I love both my other panel mates tonight because I've done great shows with them. And, yeah, the more recording, the better, because it forgets how mundane and vanilla our lives are right now.
Well, speaking of mundane and vanilla, he has been popping up on a bunch of shows lately. He was just on the Mothership over on the PlayStation Wrestling Feed. He's been on the last episode of Great Debate, as well as many fun group live watches on Laughing Theater, Mr. Sean Kidd. Sean, how are you tonight?
I am doing great, and Andy, thanks for having me back so I can continue to share my in-depth knowledge of the sports world with you.
Speaking of mundane and vanilla.
Yeah, so it's an honor to be here, and obviously I look forward to once again being here and actually getting to do my second pod with Scott in about over a week. So happy to be here.
All right, awesome. And then rounding out the trio of guests tonight, he is one half of the Geeks Who Like Sports podcast, a very dear old friend of mine, Mr. Lee Elias. Lee, how are you tonight?
You know, Andy, the first time you had me on a show, you said, hey, listen, we're going to talk about Star Wars for 2 hours, which was like a gift to me. Now you're like, let's talk about sports and geek culture. And I'm thinking to myself, man, Hanukkah Harry does exist. And his name is Andy Atten. And I appreciate you having me on the show tonight. I'm happy to be here. Thanks so much.
When he told me you were on, because I was on that Star Wars show with you, I thought you were head of the Elias Sports Bureau. I'm like, cool, I can talk stats for 3 hours.
Yeah, no, I'm the head of the little known Elias Sports Bureau Limited, which is not a real thing. But I wanted to get your hopes up for a second there. But yeah, no, I have a last name. A famous NHLer had this name. There's the Elias Sports Bureau. Yeah, and not affiliated with any of them. And like most Eliases, I'm going to make my own way and make sure people know my name.
Wow. The only other famous people I know of with my last name is William Atherton, the actor, Mr. Peck in Ghostbusters, yeah, amongst other
this
movies.
Man, and this man has no dick.
Is this true? And also, the
You're
fine,
our brother!
The fine middle relief pitcher from, I believe, the 80s. I think he pitched for the A's, amongst others, Keith Atherton. So there's your obscure trivia for the night. All right, so
glad we know you, Andy. I'm glad we know you as the editor in our lives.
Oh, thank you very much, Eliash. Anyway, here we go. So we're starting our sports segment, and we're going very timely. So, you know, unlike WWE, which I guess is apparently wrestling is essential, the major sports leagues have shut down and are still working out their plans to come back. And that's what we're going to talk about in the beginning of the show here. So we're going to talk about the future of each of the four leagues once the world sort of starts to come back, recovers from this coronavirus outbreak, and how do you think they should come back? So we're going to start with the NFL, and we're going to start with you, Scott. How do you think the NFL has been probably the least affected out of all the leagues so far, but the draft is coming up. I believe they're doing an online draft. How do you see the NFL proceeding going forward?
Well, the NFL obviously was the least affected because they're the only league that wasn't in the middle of something yeah, when this happened. So they just got lucky. They are hoping to be able to start on time. Remember, this is a whole new with the CBA. We're having a 17th game this season. So this is a big year for the NFL. Brady's in a new uniform. This is big shits for the NFL in 2020. And so, this online drafting is not that big a deal because lately the NFL draft's been a little dull. Does anybody really watch Saturday at 3 o'clock when the Giants are making the 388th pick and they need like a, you know, a fourth string center? So the online drafting is fine. I don't think anybody really cares unless you're a team that really blows, like, you know, Cleveland or Miami or something, and you're talking about trading up for Joe Burrow from LSU or something, or Herbert from Oregon. So other than that, the league's just kind of crossing fingers and toes and praying that by August, I mean, preseason games they could play without fans because who gives a shit, really? I think the NFL is praying that by Labor Day we're back to some sense of normalcy. If we can get to that point and have a season, I think the NFL will be fine.
Okay.
But if anything stretches past September, I don't know what they're going to do. So it could be interesting. But right now, the NFL is praying that something can happen by Labor Day.
Yeah, and we just missed. I mean, imagine if this happened like a week, couple weeks before the Super Bowl. That would have been insane.
Oh, that would have been devastating. They would have lost millions.
Yeah.
Millions.
Like, okay. Lee, what about you? What do you think about the NFL and their recovery plan?
Yeah, you know, there's a few things. I mean, there's benefits and bad things for each league. One of the benefits of the NFL is that their broadcast contract is actually worth more than what they make from fans being in the building.
Right.
And it puts them in a really unique position where if fans can't come to the games, they technically I don't want to say they're making money, but they could probably operate with no fans in the building. Keeping in mind too that even though they extended the NFL season, there's still not that many games played in an NFL season at home, and it's 7 or 8, right? Mm-hmm. So with that, when the NFL's in a unique position where they probably will be able to play without fans, which is something that we're going to have to discuss with every sports league, because I don't think there's any scenario where any of these leagues come back with fans in the building to start. Unless we're really lucky and a vaccine is created sooner than later, right? So I think you're going to see when some of these maybe quarantine restrictions are lifted, NFL games without fans to start. I do think they might be able to start on time, but here's the thing, and this is going to be a theme with every league tonight, is that if there's no vaccine or no safe way of getting these guys to play, if anyone in any pro sport gets coronavirus, everyone's going to have to stop for 2 weeks. And I have to imagine that every sports league commissioner is not going to want to be in a position where, hey, we have to stop for 2 weeks because player on this team got COVID-19, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm praying that there's a vaccine by the time the NFL season gets underway. And that I think that large gatherings are just not a reality that's going to happen soon. So the way I see them starting is just that, without fans in the stands, at these locations. And then, you know, you never know. Some teams, like, here's the thing. You know, and again, we'll talk about this with the other sports. There are some cities that might not be able to have games in their city, depending on what kind of like situation we're in the city. And we're gonna focus obviously on New York City tonight several times. I mean, you know, I can't see MSG being in commission anytime soon, even though the Giants play in New Jersey. But you know what I'm saying? So I think exactly. That the NFL's a unique position. I could see them playing games without fans in a much safer environment, as long as the players all agree to some form of contract where that's going to happen. But with revenues and stuff like that, they're in a really unique and good, you know, if you want to, I'm using quotations, but good position considering the situation.
Yeah, and they probably, and if there's no fans, they don't have to do it in a stadium. They could do it in a facility. You know, they could do it in a much smaller, kind of like how WWE is doing everything in a performance center right now. It's sad. You know, they don't need the people on the sidelines. All right, well, we're going to stick with you, Lee, and we'll talk about baseball now. And you have a group on Facebook for your Geeks Who Like Sports podcast and fan group. And you posted a very interesting graphic the other day about possible alignment of how this could work for the MLB. Why don't you talk about that a little bit and how you think that could work?
Yeah, so baseball, so every league's putting forth a lot of ideas right now. We just don't, some of them are really out there and some of them are really like interesting. So what baseball's attitude was to kind of keep all the MLB players in the respective spring training areas. So, you know, the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League, and then redoing divisions in baseball based off of the actual preseason league. So, for example, the Phillies and Yankees would be in the same division, right? So you're not talking about your traditional MLB AL and NL divisions here. And essentially what would happen, and this is where it gets kind of funny but creepy at the same time, is that they want all the players to be in the stands when they're not playing. So all the games would take place, you know, in Florida or wherever the preseason league is, and then the players that aren't playing would be asked to be in the stands to watch the games. Now, again, there are a lot of hurdles with something like this, whereas, like, again, if any player gets sick, they have to stop. The players would have to be quarantined. You know, is the MLBPA going to allow their players to be quarantined to fulfill this? And again, if there's a paycheck involved, I'm sure they'll do anything. But it was a really interesting idea to at least have them playing baseball, but in their spring training facilities. So, you know, I actually posed the question back to you guys. Like, would you even want to see that? Would you want to see a different divisional lineup? Would the person with a team that wins the World Series, I mean, would we ever look on that as the same way? Are we okay with the Yankees and Phillies being in the same division, you know, without those traditional like rivalries, you know, the Red Sox not near the Yankees? And then it comes down to like the really singular question is, how important is it that we're just playing baseball right now? Like, is this something people would be willing to swallow right now?
I mean, for sure. Baseball, it's like the longest drawn out sport. It's part of summer. I mean, I've been going through serious withdrawal. I've been watching the simulated games on the Yes Network's Facebook page where they've been playing MLB 20 The Show and they're doing the Yankee season. So that I'm getting my fix, and I actually just ordered it and got it. So I'm three games in, except the Orioles, which is no, you know, great feat, but still. It's everybody's looking for their fix somehow. And if they can do it, at least in the minimum, I mean, like you said, though, there's so many risks. I mean, it's kind of like the thing would happen when it first broke out, which was the first leak to say, "Hey, we're done. We're
well." Here's the interesting thing about it too is, and Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, said this, and I think this kind of goes for all sports leagues, is that their concern as the commissioner, the person making the decision on how they move forward, essentially, is, you know, it's got to be respectful to the sport. Right. So there's a lot of ideas out there for every league of like, oh, let's do it this way. Let's do it this way. But it's a very fair question to ask. It's like, are we being fair to the sport? Right. I know people want to see the game. I know people want to experience sports right now more than anything. But are we being fair to the game and the culture of the game? That's a super fair question. All right. But yeah, it's tough. It's a tough call, right? But like you said, man, we all want our fix right now. We're all dying for sports. I mean, the fact that DraftKings put up a a betting structure on one of the political debates shows you how much we're looking for this right now. And, you know, we should say it too, you know, sports was the reason we started taking all of this seriously. When the NBA shut down, that was really when the country stopped and went, wait, what's happening right now? And within a week, everything changed within a week. You know, we should be thanking the NBA, because if the NBA didn't shut down that night, we might be in a way worse position than we're in right now.
Yeah, it scared the crap out of me because I was in Philly for Elimination Chamber right before, like a few days before that game. Somebody who won't be named scared the crap out of the three of us who went by saying, hey, somebody's in the building had corona. We're like, and then finally we looked closely like, crap, it was 3 days after we were there. Thanks. But go ahead.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, it shows the power of sports both ways. Like, you know, sports, the NBA and sports shutting down probably saved an immense amount of lives that we won't talk about. But at the same time, we've lost something that is so culturally significant in this country that we're looking at things like, can you imagine 31 days ago having this conversation that the Cactus and the Grapefruit League might be a reality for the season? I mean, you would laugh at it.
Yeah.
Right. If I said to you something like, hey, the Astros and the Marlins and the Mets and the Cardinals and the Nationals are now in the same division, you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of hated teams in that division. But anyway, you know what I mean? It's mind boggling. But, you know, I always like to keep that in mind when we're discussing these things of like this 2020 realignment with the two spring training leagues. Yeah. I mean, I want it because I want baseball. But do we really want that? You know what I'm trying to say, guys? Yeah. Do we really want to see that, or is it just that we need sports so bad we'll be willing to see anything? And again, because I don't want to look back at any of these leagues in 20 years or 5 years or 1 year and be like, oh, well, that was fun, but it doesn't really count. Like, I don't want to say that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of like how we're a lot of us are wrestling fans, and, you know, we look at WrestleMania, and it was like, yeah, it was great, but should they have done it? You know,
It's pre-produced, yeah.
Yeah. So, Scott, what do you think about the MLB and their plans and how they could recover?
Well, being a wrestling fan, that WrestleMania might be one of the most fun we've ever watched in the last, probably 20 years. And it was nice. I mean, it wasn't 9 hours like WrestleMania 32 was. Baseball is very different because it's been pretty clear that the union, the players do not want to play in empty buildings. So if no fans, no games, no ticky, no washy. So if there's any way to avoid that, good luck. This alignment makes me laugh because I fucking hate every team in my division, and I would have no problem throwing it not only every Astro, but certainly every Cardinal and probably every National. I miss baseball nobody's business. And again, I there's a great YouTube channel called MLB Vault that's got all sorts of, I mean, games from the 70s, 80s, now, you know, the 50s. And I found a YouTube channel that has all old Laker games. So I'm getting my fix. I haven't found a Bruins channel yet, though. But I have I'm trying to get my fix. Notre Dame Fighting Irish official YouTube channel is posting football games from the last 20 years, even further back than that into the 90s. But whereas football can kind of wait it out, baseball needs to make up its mind kind of quickly. And I'm sure that not only with Trump talking to the sports leagues, but the owners talking to the union, because, you know, baseball owners have always been scumbags anyway, and I'm sure they don't want to pay anybody, any of these players, if nobody's playing. So I'm sure they're trying to work something out where they don't come off as too douchey. But baseball's got to come up with something quick, mm-hmm. if they're going to do anything at all. And my prediction is we are not going to have a season. I don't think any of this is going to happen. I think they're just going to – I think Manfred, who's much more societally friendly than any commissioner in the past, is going to err on the side of caution, and I don't think we're going to have a 2020 season.
Okay.
I really don't. Right. Sucks, but I don't think we will.
All right, so switching gears to a league that was, you know, right in there, you know, starting to get to their home stretch, the NBA. What do you think happens with the NBA, Scott?
Well, as a Laker fan, I'm pretty pissed because I think I was about to win a 17th ring, which was pretty awesome. But I think they'd like to figure something out. I don't know what like Lee was saying, you know, there's a lot of business gobbledygook that is way over our pay grade. Mm-hmm. We're looking at it from a fan's perspective. He's exactly right. The NFL is caring more about, you know, CBS is fucked right now. Just on a side note, take it from someone who's very intimate with the situation. Not having the tournament and not getting any Masters revenue till November is rough. And if they lose that NFL money in the fall, they're fucked. So, I mean, there's rumors that CBS Viacom may sell off, and this is no small thing, may sell off the Star Trek franchise.
Wow.
That's pretty much like George Turkey Giles Lucas selling to Mickey Mouse. Maybe on a smaller scale, but same thing. That's how bad
that would never happen.
That's how bad Viacom, right? Lucas would never give away his precious.
He would never do that. Binks. Wait, they made the Mandalorian? This is working out.
Yeah, I know, right? So I don't know. The NBA, I think they'd like to do a 16-team single elimination winner take all tournament. Just take the top 8 in the East, the top 8 in the West. 16 teams, one game, done.
Yeah.
That would be awesome from a drama perspective, because then you've got anybody can win. The fucking Nets could go on a run.
It's like, you know, it could be like football. It could be any given Sunday. You know, any team.
Given Sunday. Could be any given Thursday night.
Yeah.
And if there's anywhere to do it, if there's some venue that would tackle it, so be it.
Yeah.
And if it's in an empty building, so be it. I mean, right now the NBA is actually doing the playoffs via 2K20. Like, players are actually playing the video game, which is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. But that's the solution I think they ideally would like to come up with. There's not enough time to do a bunch of best of sevens and a bunch of best of fives, and that's not going to happen. I'd like to see them do a winner-take-all 16-team tournament, 8 East, 8 West, and roll with it and see what happens. Okay. Maybe Lakers-Bucks, which is what everybody expected, Giannis against LeBron and AD, or some other weird combo.
I never know.
But going back to Lee's point, will anybody care? Mm-hmm. Or will anybody count it?
Yeah.
That's the problem. Will history give 2020? Here's the ultimate question. Will history give 2020 the benefit of the doubt? Mm-hmm. We'll see.
So. It's a great question.
It'll be an asterisk for every aspect.
You're bringing up a great point. And here's the thing. Think about how we look at events in the past or people in the past that have that asterisk right now. To be fair, most of them are just negative topics. And, you know, when we talk about asterisks next to players, it's usually because someone thought there was an unfair advantage or something like that. But the other example is even like we have a hard time sometimes debating champions from shortened seasons, you know, seasons that were cut due to a lockout or, you know, some sort of something that kept the season from going. We have a hard time with those. Well, if the full season was played, that wouldn't have happened, you know. So and this is a question I'm throwing back to the group here, is would, you know, is a team that wins a championship in these scenarios, now they're always going to be known as the team that won during that time. But are we going to say, like, that was not a legitimate champion because they didn't do it that way? Or as you just said, is it going to be like, yeah, look, that was the year of the quarantine, and, you know, that's what we had. That's what we had, and they won.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows the answer. It's a tough question to answer. But I'm saying
it is. Yep.
It's a fair question. That's what these commissioners are saying. Like, is this fair to our league? You know, is that going to be a black eye on the league? Is it silly? And here's another question. What if they start doing the postseason? Like you said, and then, like I said, someone gets it. They have to stop. Like, it's devastating.
Yeah, it really would be.
Yeah. Lee, what do you think about the NBA's plans, though? What do you think they could do?
Yeah, you know, it might be fair to actually group the NBA and the NHL together just because they were so, you know, they're only two weeks apart.
Seasons. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
If that's okay, I'm not trying to hijack.
No, go ahead. You're, and you're the NHL guy, so.
Yeah. Andy likes to do the Ten Commandments of podcasts anyway, so there may be an intermission.
I am not OCD at all.
He parks the Red Sea of the podcast. Podcast, go. No, when I look at the NBA and the NHL, again, two seasons that are always 2 weeks apart. The NHL just 2 weeks ahead of the NBA season, similar postseasons. And I've actually heard a lot of really interesting and great ideas. The big tragedy of the NBA season is that Kobe Bryant passed away the way he did, and that we're not going to be able to honor him with a postseason. Obviously honored him with his Hall of Fame induction, which was wonderful the way that was handled. It's a great class. But for the Lakers, and again, I'm a Sixers fan, for the Lakers not to have the opportunity right now to play basketball, it must be even extra devastating. You know, what's so weird about the situation, not to keep this somber, but I mean, Kobe, what, died in February, right?
Late January.
I mean, here's the thing. That's not that long ago, and it seems like it's forever ago.
Yeah,
right? Because of what's going on. And it's one of those things of I'm devastated for his family and really the whole NBA. It's not just the Lakers, that they won't have a chance to honor him by playing basketball, and they will whenever it comes back. But that's the biggest tragedy of the NBA season for me right now. But yeah, they were talking about tournament styles, as you said, of like, you know, almost an NCAA type tournament where it's just one and done. I love the idea behind that 100%. I mean, who wouldn't want to see that? I wouldn't have a problem with it. Again, it's got to be done the right way, though, where the health of the players is done. There's no way fans are around for that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the first thing. And then when you look at the NHL, I mean, the NHL had a really interesting proposal of having four neutral sites around the country and having the playoffs held in kind of not in an ongoing tournament style where there'd be multiple games during the day. And then the whole tournament would end up at UND, where they have an NHL sized college arena for the Stanley Cup. I'm sorry, the conference finals and then the Stanley Cup final in full 7-game series. And again, it's a great idea. But if you can't get people in the building, who knows, you know? And the other problem with both leagues is that because the regular season wasn't finished, in my opinion, to even be fair, you'd have to at minimum have every team play the same amount of games. So, for example, in the NHL season's 82 games. I think they were just hitting game 70, 71. So you'd have to kind of get up to 75 games played just so it's even. I think teams could agree on that. And then you have to get to the scenario of, okay, now we're going to start the playoffs and play the playoffs with everything going on the way it's going on. As you can hear my dogs in the background, they completely agree with what I'm saying.
They're very agitated. They're very like –
someone must be at the door. I apologize for that.
Okay.
But they just want their hockey too. But, yeah, here's the deal. With all four of the leagues, right, and depending on where they were at in their season, at some point, you know – and again, I feel like they're kind of ripping the Band-Aid off slowly. At some point, it will just make sense to not play and just go into next season. And I don't know when that point is. I don't have a problem with the prospecting of possible postseasons and ways to end the season, because at least it keeps us talking and it wouldn't take away all hope. But yeah, at some point, it's just not viable. The other NHL proposal, which I thought was really brilliant, I think this is brilliant, but I don't know how other people are going to feel about it, was that, you know, all the NHL players are saying, look, we need at least 2 weeks when this ends to even get back to game shape, right? So what they wanted to do was, if the season resumed in July, have a 2-week training camp, finish the regular season in the playoffs by late September. Then the month of October, when the season would typically start, would be off. You'd have the draft, you'd have free agency, and then the season would start again in November. And I like that because we'd have summer hockey, which would be amazing. Summer hockey, 1 month off, and then you're into the next season. The players don't really lose any time because they're getting the time off now. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of just flow season to season. Now, here's a question again I'm going to pose to the whole group. Andy, if that's okay.
That's fine with you.
This is a question I want to ask everybody is, do we need to have a full season next year uninterrupted, or are you okay with compacting this season ending and the postseason flowing into next season? Or do you protect next season at all costs? How do you guys feel about that question?
That's a good question.
I think actually for the NBA, I love that idea. Keep the records as is and just restart, kind of make this a combo season, name it something, and then pick up where next, if they feel like this is going to go into 2021, God, let's hope it doesn't. They could pick up where this season left off with all the records and just finish the season off and make it like one long season.
Yeah.
Could do that too for both leagues.
Yeah.
In case they decide not to do anything in the summer.
Yeah. I mean, I think people are just so hungry that they want their sports back. And I mean, whatever the best way to handle it and safest way to handle it, I think people will accept. Yeah, they're going to be detractors no matter what you do. There's going to be people bitch and moan on Twitter and what have you. You know, there's no correct answer to any of these questions, actually.
I mean, honestly, the funny part, sorry, Andy, the funny part that Lee makes a great point that people keep seeming to forget. The fans aren't the only variable in this whole sports scenario. It's the players, too. We can't rely on where they are at all times. What if they go into a 9,000-person Walmart? You might as well walk into a mushroom cloud. So, you know, God only knows what – so you can't trust all these players to be able to quarantine or socially distance successfully. And they're the ones that could get sick, and then shit gets shut down anyway, and then we get teased.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not to mention, you're gonna if there is sports, you're gonna ask them to quarantine themselves even more. Like in from a players' association level, from a CBA level, are they even allowed to do that? Like, look, we're gonna play, but you cannot be with anyone. You have to be with your teammates all the time. No family, nothing. Yeah, you can't
lockdown. Try
not
to look
at anybody. Yeah, I mean, is that even realistic? Here's another funny scenario. That's not funny. But, you know, look, here's the thing. There's no normalcy in sport till there's a vaccine. There's just no opportunity. That's the dirty little secret nobody wants to talk about, right? Until there's a vaccine for this, there is absolutely no chance of full stadiums and normalcy, right? So what happens – and again, I got to say this right off the bat. I hope this thing is discovered as soon as humanly possible, not for sports but for the betterment of mankind, number one, okay? Mm-hmm. Number two is what happens if there's a scenario – where there literally is no sports until a year after this started, then do they just pick up where they left off a year later and just finish it out? I mean, I'd be all right with that too.
That's what I was saying, exactly.
Or do they award like the best records with the you know, here's the President's Trophy, not the Stanley Cup, but you get
like the 81 baseball strike where there's two halves.
No team would want that championship. No team would want a championship where they haven't won it, like in a game. There's just no way. I can't see any athlete even thinking about taking that.
Something just came through on Twitter. PGA Tour officials are expected to announce this week their intention to resume the tour season on June 11th through the 14th at the Charles Schwab Challenge. Multiple sources told Golf Digest. Also expect that fans will not be allowed to attend that first tournament at Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth, as the tour looks to follow health and safety guidelines. Other early tournaments are expected to be played without spectators.
Yeah. It's because they can social distance.
Yeah. You can, for the most part.
The sources, because you can have, I mean, I guarantee you golfers won't have caddies. They'll have to carry their own clubs. Kind of like the old days.
Or the caddies will just be 6 feet away.
Yeah, or they could be the caddies from Bushwood, you know?
Yeah.
What are they going to do? They'll have to do six foot club chucks. don't catch the putter with your teeth.
Are they wiping them down first before they can?
Yeah, I know, right? Sources previously told Golf Digest those options focused on moving the Charles Schwab Challenge during the RBC Canadian Open, originally scheduled for that weekend, will not be played, freeing up the date for another event. After the Charles Schwab, the tour is an opening on its calendar for a potential PGA Tour tournament. That was where the U.S. Open was to be held. From there, the latest schedule scenario has the last weekend in June would be the Travelers, which is right here in my home state, the old Sammy Davis Cannon GHO. Then the tournament in Detroit would be moved from May to July. The John Deere Classic, the Memorial, the TPC. I don't know about the major. The only major that I know for a fact, well, it looks like the PGA Championship will be in early August in San Francisco, which is where it was originally. The U.S. Open will be in Wingfoot. Then the Ryder Cup. Then they take a breather, and then November 12th through the 15th will be the Masters. So that just came through on Twitter from someone. So
Yeah, you brought up a good talking point, too. Like, what are some other sports going to have to handle it? Like, and that'll lead into our next question. But, you know, like tennis, I think Wimbledon has been canceled, I believe.
Yep, for the first time since.
Can I make a note on that? Yeah. I'm going to tell you guys something you probably don't know about this. This is one of the most interesting things. We actually talked about this on my podcast last week. So Wimbledon, little known to me, for the last like 20 years has been paying insurance on a pandemic.
Yeah. No, I knew
so
that.
They made over $100 million in insurance from what just happened by canceling Wimbledon.
Wow.
I found that fascinating. And I'm not in a greedy way. It's like, what are the odds of it? They're the only sports league that had pandemic insurance. And it's paying off. And they paid like $30 million into it.
Crazy.
So Lloyd Alonzo is kind of going, bloody hell.
Yeah. Right, mate, you sure?
Sure you can't go out there and hit the ball?
Yeah. What are you going to do now? You're going to play rugby?
So, yeah, like, you know, we just talked about golf, tennis. I mean, auto racing. I don't know. I can't see this.
They went to esports, and now they have a guy losing his sponsor because he quit, and then a guy making a racial slur. So that's going to end pretty quick.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, don't put Hicks on the Xbox. That's what we learned from that.
Don't give the Hicks a microphone. That's basically
yeah, yeah, yeah. And put it on nationally televised television. So, what could go wrong?
So speaking of some of these other sports, we're going to kind of jump around I can flow, Scott. what are some of your favorite non-big sports to watch on TV and why? So we'll start with you, Scott. What do you like to watch on TV? You know, like me personally, like my dad watches golf a lot and I'm just like, nope, can't do it. But for like bowling, I could actually watch on TV because I used to bowl a lot and worked in a bowling alley when I was in high school and college. So what are some sports that you like to watch on TV that are not of the big four variety?
Well, first off, Andy, that's great. But Lee hosts the show anyway. But
are we going to do this again? Every time Lee's on one of my damn shows, he tries to take over.
It has begun.
I'm not going to mute myself for 20 minutes. I'm sorry.
I love tennis. I've loved tennis since I was a kid. I love playing it, and I love watching it. So I do watch – my job has made me hate golf because I love watching the Masters as a spectator, but I've dealt with people at the Masters, and they're grade A douchebags. So they've made me hate golf a little bit because they're assholes. PGA Tour people are fine because, again, my client, we cover the Masters and the PGA Championship. The PGA Championship people are awesome. The Masters people are assholes. So they've kind of made me sour on golf. But I love watching tennis. I grew up a Sampras and Agassi and Johnny Mack and Stefan Edberg and all those guys. I love tennis as a kid. You talking about sports other than the Big Four, like
yeah.
And like anything else?
Anything else? You'll see on like Wire World of Sports or Sports Spectacular or something.
Well, I love. I actually was very upset. No, D'Amato and I always debate about this, but I love the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of devastated when we lost when the Olympics were canceled. I mean, I know they're going to do them next year, and that's fine. But and I'm a big summer fan because I feel like as an American, we win more summer medals than we do winter medals. And I watch more summer events. I love track and field. I love watching our sprinters, our distance runners. Obviously, I love watching hoops because ever since the 92 Dream Team, I love watching our team kick the shit out of everybody. Honestly, the only sport I watch in the winter is hockey. Mm-hmm. I got up that one year. Lee can remind me of this. was it 2010 when Oshie had scored the shootout goal to beat the Russians? What year was that?
It was 2013, 14, whatever year that was that there was the Olympics. So probably 14. 2014.
I think it was 14, yeah. Yeah. 2014 yeah. When TJ Oshie, who now plays for the asshole Blues. I think he does anyway.
Capitals. Plays for the Capitals.
Oh, he's on the Caps. He used to be on the Blues. Now he's on the Caps.
He did.
Blues are still assholes.
And he won a cup with the Caps.
Yeah. Fuck you, Laura Branigan. Fucking D'Amato sings it now every time he comes on the show. I was bummed at losing the Olympics. I love watching the Olympics. I love watching track and field. I love watching basketball. I love watching I'm a big summer fan. My mom loved figure skating when I was a kid. She loved Debbie Thomas and Oksana Bayul and all of those. Oksana Burp. Oksana Burp Baiul. So, yeah, I love the Olympics and I love tennis.
Okay. All right. Lee, what else? What other sports do you like to watch on TV?
So, first off, I think welcome to the Great Debate, hosted by Lee Elias. Thank you for asking me these questions. Seriously, I think the Olympics actually is a phenomenal answer. I mean, aside from minor league sports, which is another thing we should talk about, would suffer from everything that's going on right now. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the XFL. I really did, and I was devastated that they went bankrupt. Yeah, I was really enjoying that on TV. I was really upset to hear that, you know, it, from no fault of their own, they just had went bankrupt because, you know, there's no way they can make money in the first season. But a surprise answer for you guys, another sport I really enjoy watching is rugby. It's just tough to get any of it on TV, but when it's on, I mean, that's one of those games I can kind of watch any game. I mean, I'm surprised when I'm enjoying it, but like, it's so great to watch and experience, especially live. And you know, there's different versions of rugby that you can play on in terms of like the rules and stuff like that. But I've really, really enjoyed that when it's on. You know, not that I'm the host or anything, but I bet you Sean has something to say about this. Sean, you're on the Great Debate, episode number 10. What's your thoughts?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Hey, Sean.
So, no, listen. Obviously, I'm not the sports guy, but you mentioned XFL. I had to jump in because I was totally enjoying the XFL, and I said it on the last debate pod that, you know, they had a great heel guy in up there. I think it was in New York, and I thought the XFL was great, but what I did like watching growing up is, and it's kind of out there because I used to play it in high school, was volleyball. So I liked watching it on TV. I watched it whenever it was on, and I don't know. It was just a game that I always got into. I didn't find it boring, and you know, I enjoyed playing it. Now I'm old and fat, and I can't play it, but really enjoyed it growing up and watching it on TV. So I can't add something.
Did you have a team? Did you have an XFL team?
Yes, the Defenders. I was actually
going to my first game
on March 28th. When they shut the season down.
That's
so
too
I was
soon.
Actually going to a, yeah, I was actually going to go to a game. I was really into it. So
yeah, they had the greatest cup snake in history, and unfortunately, that's what they'll be remembered for.
Unfortunately, it's a shame. The coronavirus destroying the XFL is a tragedy.
It's painful. So, it was good football too. They did a
really
good
was.
Job.
It was good football. I enjoyed it.
Now, Lee, you say you can watch rugby. What about Australian rules football? Because I have no fucking clue what the hell is happening.
That's what makes it so great.
The Sydney Swans, right? Baby. The Sydney Swans.
When I lived in England, I really fell in love with rugby as a sport. Any sport like that, Australian rules football. I mean, there's something about it that I just seem to enjoy. I mean, especially the toughness. I mean, like I said, I grew up a hockey player, so like toughness was kind of the name of the game. Mm-hmm. And to see those athletes, and I mean, some of these people are just. I mean, football players are big, but these guys are just massive people that look like they could murder you. And there's no pads, and they're bleeding, and they don't care. And then here's the other thing, Andy, is when you get the rules down, like you really start to understand the rules, it really is fun to watch, especially with the tactics and how those games can go back and forth. In fact, merging these two conversations together, one of the things I loved about the XFL was the scoring system. You were never really out of the game. If you were down by not 9 points, you're right in there. You know, and rugby kind of works that way too in a lot of ways because there's different points for what you can do. And it's just there's something about it I really enjoyed. And again, if you ever get a chance to watch it live, I know there's a collegiate championship every year that's like one day, and it's just game after game after game, and it's so fun. But yeah, Australian rules football, same thing. It's just, you know, if I had not lived overseas, I would not have ever gotten into that. That's what I'll tell you.
Yeah, I had a good friend of mine in college who was from Turkey, grew up in England, kind of a chubby guy, you know, but tough as nails, and played rugby. I mean, I saw a guy break a guy's nose with one punch because the guy, like, you know, decked him after he got rid of the ball. He looked up, saw the ref was not looking, boom, right in the nose, and I lost my shit. But, it was a lot of fun to watch. I'm on the sideline next to the keg. God knows how many beers in at that point. They also tried to start a cricket team or a club.
Ah.
And he comes back, we were in the same dorm, and he comes back and goes, oh, I just came back from my first cricket practice. I said, how'd it go? He goes, oh, only three mates went to the ER, so we're pretty good. I mean, I'm like, it's cricket. He goes, oh, yeah.
Because you ever lift one of those things?
Yeah.
They're fucking heavy as hell.
And they were taking them to the temple and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, those things are not light. It's not a wiffle bat. Let's put it that way.
No. So, yeah, so it is kind of fun to watch those obscure sports on the Ocho. So Sean got that reference, I know. All right.
Yes.
So if the well, let's change gears a little bit though. If the NFL come when it does come back, there's been so many moves. I mean, you can't remember these quarterbacks. Yes, they're in the twilight of their careers, but like Tom Brady, Philip Rivers, this many changing teams in a season. Scott, will it be one of the most interesting of recent memory to unfold in terms of player movement and how things could work out?
Absolutely, because of the one big player movement, and that is that number 12 moves south. Mm-hmm. Very simple. You're now going to get two guaranteed regular season games between Tom Brady and Drew Brees. One game in gorgeous weather and one game indoors. So none of that snow bullshit that Brady got away with for 20 fucking years. Mm-hmm. Good weather, great offenses, fun fucking games. And if I'm the Panthers, I better put all my money into whoever the hell their quarterback is, because you know, even Atlanta's got Matt Ryan, you know. So you've got three great quarterbacks in one division and the Panthers. So if they're cutting Cam loose.
Yeah, they just signed McCaffrey's like the biggest, like the highest paid running back in history, right? I just saw
Zeke
that.
Is. Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. Oh, you McCaffrey. Yeah, I know. And of course, you know, only my team would do something dumb. You know, it's now out that Dak Prescott threw a big party and Zeke this weekend. And I guess when they saw social distancing, they thought feet meant inches. I don't know. But only the Cowboys would do something that stupid. I'm surprised there weren't any bricks of hash in the fucking bathtub. So I think this was going to be a tremendous season just for that. A lot of other guys moved around. Teams were getting better. I would have been fascinated, and I know we have obviously Jet fans and Bills fans and Dolphins fans listening. The first season since 1999-2000 of the Brady-less Patriots. So there was going to be a lot of intrigue. I really want the NFL season because I think there's going to be a ton of intrigue this year with player changes. And the big one is Brady's colors going from blue and white to whatever the fuck the Bucks are. calculator
red.
Orange, whatever the hell it is.
Red and gold.
Damn it, go back to the creamsicles. Fuck this shit. Bucko Bruce on the helmets, baby. Bucko Bruce.
Mm-hmm. All right. Lee, what do you think about the NFL with all the moves and all that?
Well, I think Bills fans are very happy. This is the first time in a long time they are like, hey, we can win this division. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I equate it back to last year's kind of Super Bowl. You know, when the Chiefs got in, you know, all of a sudden for the first time in 3-4 years, we're like, oh, wow, the Pats aren't there. You know, and I remember that feeling of like, this is different. You know, like whoever wins this year, it's going to be different. And, you know, it was a great game and everything. But, like, I think it just continues from there. I mean, you know, eyes on Brady for sure in Tampa Bay. But, like, he's aging and, like, it's going to be one of those, hey, can he do it? But there's storylines all over the league and it just kind of opens up the league again. I mean, I'm a big NFC East guy. I'm a big Eagles fan. And the NFC East is really different if you think about it in the sense of just the storylines there. All of a sudden, Doug Peterson and the Eagles are the most tenured team in the division, where just 3 years ago they were the youngest and the newest. And then you have, like, the Giants have a new coach that was a very controversial pick with their very controversial quarterback and their very controversial offensive coordinator.
From what college was he from?
Duke!
You're from Duke!
Duke! Right, so there's that. And then, you know, the Cowboys obviously have a new coaching staff. And, you know, they're not going to get COVID because they can't catch anything. And then, you know, right? Please know I was meaning that lighthearted for anybody suffering. And then, you know, the Skins still suck. But, you know, that division's got a lot of wild cards, a lot of question marks. You know, their honeymoon periods with the Giants and the Cowboys. Can the Eagles kind of not be injured for a game? You know, one of the gutsiest performances I've seen that team have last year with all the injuries, except their quarterback until the last game, which their quarterback got injured. But, the league has some great storylines around it. But, like, here's the thing. The NFL – it is never bad on storylines. I mean, that's one of the things I love about the NFL. I hate officiating and I hate a lot of the politics that go into that sport, but I love football and the NFL always has some great storyline to follow. And this year is no different.
Yeah. All right. Sean, now I know you're not a sports guy, but you live in the D.C. area. Do you root for the Redskins?
There was a time, yeah. I don't really root for much anymore.
I was rooting for the Defenders.
Yeah, I was rooting for the Defenders.
No, I was just trying to make the point that, you know, there's four of us on the show, and the entire NFC East is represented in terms of fandom for the most part.
Well, yeah, but the Defenders were my, you know, the Defenders were kind of the hope for D.C., and now that's out the window, so.
Yeah, well, you know, Daniel Snyder's like Dolan, like one of those owners that, you know, you're never going to win.
Just horrible, isn't he? Like, you know, my brother's a season ticket holder for the Redskins. And he was telling me, it's just like the fans have had enough. They just don't believe this team is trying to win right now. And they know it's going to take, you know, 2 to 5 seasons before they even have a chance with the draft. That's like, why are people going to invest in that team right now? And it's a shame because that's a fan base and a really historical NFL team that's just not getting what they deserve right now. And I think the Dolan comparison is perfect. I mean, it's just a guy that, you know, like you said, I don't know James Dolan, but I would not say as an owner he's done the best possible job for his sports teams.
No. As much as people hated the boss, you know what? He got those – the teams won. You know, he did – you know,
he loved the Yankees.
Yeah,
he loved the
Yankees. He loved,
you know,
the
there's
Yankees.
No question about that. So much that he got himself fired a couple times, you know. Yeah.
I mean, not everybody's going to be the Maras, you know, who are great owners, great family people. You know, that was one thing about being a Giants fan. You know, they cared about the fans, that family.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to kind of cross over into what our next segment's going to be about. But what are some of your favorite performances by athletes in TV and movies? Sean, we're going to start with you, since, you know, you haven't really spoken that much. What are some of your performances by, you know, athletes?
Well, this should be pretty good considering my limited knowledge of athletes, but I'm going to go with what I know, and I'm going to show my age a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, well, first and foremost, I got to say Andre the Giant, Princess Bride.
Yeah.
You know, probably
iconic.
Yeah, iconic, and he was made perfect for the role. So, really, really enjoy that movie. And then kind of something that me and Andy have talked about. Mm-hmm. I love Bubba Smith as Hightower in Police Academy. So that's one of my favorites. And then probably from a more recent, not even recent, I think the movie's like 20 years old now, or close to it, Brett Favre and Something About Mary. Those are the big three that I know. So those are the three I'm going to go with right now. So I'll go with those three.
All right. Scott, what about you?
Well, before I go any further, I just want to – I'm curious, Lee, what part of where in California you live. And I'm sure that whether it was a Walmart or a Costco, I'm sure you bought more toilet paper than you need because, like most Eagles fans, you're full of shit. Oh. Now, as for my favorite athlete –
Whoa, you don't need to call me out. Just back up. This is like a wrestling fan.
And he's confusing you and Ray. Ray lives in California.
First off,
Lee lives in
Philly. In California, big man. I live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, hometown hero.
I am
WW Lee, and I am laying the smacketh down on you right now for not knowing where I come from.
Well, that stadium is the only one in that metroplex of garbage that I didn't drop a deuce and miss the bowl. So next time I'm in Philadelphia, I'll make sure to go to the Link toilet. Like I left in the Philly ballpark, and I left in the fucking dumpster Flyers stadium too.
If you guys saw me do it right.
Yeah. Anyway,
you really blowing over your words there, bud. You sure you want to go down this road with me? By the way, viewership just went way up on this podcast.
It is Lee's podcast.
Yeah. It is my podcast.
Sorry for insulting the host.
It's your world, Lee. I'm just living in it.
It's kind of like Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan on primetime. Bobby, Lee's actually the host.
Anyway.
I apologize. I thought you actually lived in California, but which would be an upgrade from where you live now. So anyway, back to my favorite
Scott.
Listen,
on fire
when your best athlete is a fictional boxer, give me a call.
When your statue is Rambo.
Had Super Bowl teams, great boxers that have won world championships, and a fictional fucking boxer is the best athlete we've had in the city.
Oh, I wish Apollo Creed was real. All right. Anyway, Speaking of going down Sean's path, got to go with Hogan and his Thunder Lips, always on the top of my list. Oh, God. Oh, Reggie Jackson in The Naked Gun.
Yes.
Kill.
the queen.
That's kind of how this question came out when we just watched the first two, actually, on Laugh-In Theater.
I do like Hightower. Let me think. Dan Marino in Ace Ventura, Pet Detective?
Yeah.
That wasn't bad.
Weird
bad.
Guy, Ace. Weird guy.
I get hit in the head a lot.
those are probably my tops. Well, there's got to be some others. What about all those Astros players in the fucking Bad News Bears?
Oh, yes.
Let them play. Let Bob Watson,
Watson.
Future Yankee GM. Mm-hmm. Let them play. Let them play. Yeah. CM Punk in that terrible horror movie that I watched.
Great movie.
Did you watch it? God. It's awful.
No, I did. It's awful. It's a horrible movie, but it's great.
Awfully, it's so great. It is so great. Oh, my God. It's great. Fucking Punk whacking off with the fucking dog in the other room. That's ridiculous.
And the house leaking stuff out the wall.
Yeah, leaking. Isn't goop and mustard or whatever that was. Ridiculous. Anyway, those are probably my top ones. I would have to say Hogan is Thunderlips. Yes, Andre is Fezzik, of course. And Reggie Jackson in Naked Gun. I must kill the queen.
All right.
Oh my God, it's Enrico Palazzo.
By the way,
the guy that's yelling that I think is Chunk is what the hell was his name in Teen
Guy
Wolf?
From Teen Wolf.
Chunk. Or no, that's Goonies. What the fuck was
his name? I know
who
you're talking about.
Some derogatory
name. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up.
Chubby.
Anyway, those are my picks.
I think it's Chubby.
Chubby?
Yeah, Chubby.
Chubby.
Because Chubbs is Happy Gilmore. Lee, what about you?
So my initial pick is the Carlson brothers from Slapshot. I had to go with a hockey pick just to start. A lot of people don't know this, but Steve Carlson, who played one of the Hanson brothers, actually played with Gretzky and Gordie Howe. He's one of the very few players that have played on the team with both of those guys, having played with the Kings and the Oilers and the Whalers, going back to New England. But I gotta be honest with you guys. I'm a little shocked that no one in this group has said the next person that I'm going to name, because I am a massive fan of Dwayne Johnson. Massive. And he is a WWE athlete. But I think he's a really good actor. Like from where he started to now, his range is pretty impressive. But I mean, by far, I mean, he played collegiate football, mm-hmm. played in Canadian football, and obviously his WWE career is iconic. But I really love the man. Is a actor, and you know, there's so many roles. I mean, he's so I hate to say this, but I have kids. He's so good in Jumanji films. Mm-hmm. You know, it's surprisingly good, right? But I mean, pick a role, man. I love DJ. I love The Rock. I think he's easily my favorite.
I think he's kind of superseded athlete in for terms of how I think about him. So it didn't even cross my mind because now he's more of an actor to be.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Jungle Book when that comes. Yeah, Jungle Cruise. Sorry, Jungle Cruise.
Jungle Cruise. Yeah.
But
and Black Adam. He's going to be Black Adam, which is going to be. I mean, he might be able to get DC back to where the hell they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And cheap plug. Scott's co-host on Main Event, Nate Milton, the Godfather, actually hosts a podcast show that is dedicated to the filmography of one Dwayne The Rock Johnson called The Rocky Maivia Picture Show. So you all must check that out.
I'm actually booked for a future episode.
Awesome. So cheap plug for The Godfather. Shout out. We love Nate.
And I'm doing Pain and Gain, which is actually one of my favorite Rock.
Wow, yeah, he plays a dumb guy. That's great.
He plays a raging cokehead.
Yep.
Kind of
unrocked. I also want to say I really enjoyed Apollo Creed in Predator, and I really liked Balboa.
And The Mandalorian.
And Happy Gilmore.
I love them in that. I really loved Rocky Balboa in the first film. It was amazing.
I loved Clubber Lang on the A-Team.
Yeah, unbelievable performances, right?
Oh, and when
is a WWF wrestler?
I mean,
and when Ivan Drago was the Punisher. Wow, I'm really going deep now.
You got any others, Lee?
Yeah, I had to think about that. I probably could go with fictional athletes for a while.
Could be on a future episode of Lee Elias's Great Debate.
I thought we were on that now.
Oh shit!
Oh, that's your genius.
Andy's show. Andy knows how much like that.
I'll tell you, I'm surprised nobody said O.J. Simpson from the Naked Gun.
I was thinking it, but I didn't go over there.
Yeah. You know, Lee Trevino, just with the looks he gives Happy Gilmore in the movie, is pretty funny. You know, some others, like even though it's not the best movie, but all the guys that, you know, the wrestlers and the athletes that show up in the remake of The Longest Yard, I mean, Bob Sapp is hysterical. I mean, even the Great Khali is kind of funny in that movie.
Yeah. I really like Bobby Boucher and Billy Madison. That was a good one.
God, he's got a whole list right now.
I feel like we all missed the greatest one of all, No Holds Barred. I think that's a big miss.
That is true.
Well, you know, was it Body Slam, the movie, right? That was with Piper.
That's a fantastic
Piper movie. And the Tonga Kid.
Yes.
You know, we should actually give an honorary mention to Jim Brown here, and I'm thinking about it, because he's actually done a lot of film.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, shit. Piper in They Live. How can I skip Piper?
There you
in
go.
They Live.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Jesse, too, with his roles.
Predator.
Jesse and Predator, and, mm-hmm. yeah. Running yeah. Man.
Fractious. Kiss.
All right, so moving on to the last question in the sports segment. What is the one thing, now look, this might be a little hit a nerve because we can't do this right now, but what is the one thing that is your favorite part of going to a live sporting event? If you want, you can give, multiple answers if it, you know, is different for each sport. So Lee, give us some of your things that you love about going to live sports, whether it's, you know, baseball, hockey, football, basketball, whatever, like if they're different things. Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting answer for me. And so for those of you who don't know, I work behind the bench. I coach professional sports for a bit in the minors. And so I'm used to seeing live sports with the athletes in that capacity. But I'll tell you one thing that I really love and I can't do right now is taking someone to their first game or taking someone to an event that they've never been to and kind of watching them experience and seeing the excitement from them for the first time. I remember I was at the NHL All-Star Game this year, and I was with a couple of business associates of mine. And to see them react to that experience, having never been to anything like that, really was awesome. And I miss that, being able to experience sports through somebody else's eyes. And then the obvious camaraderie of just the day out or night out and with your buddies and, you know, just, you know, not having to worry about life for a while. You know, I won't sing the rest of Piano Man, but you know what I'm trying to say. But I really love, like, you know, here's a sad story for you guys. I was going to take my son to his first NHL game a week after this started. I was going to take the Flyers to the Edmonton Oilers, and I didn't get to do that. I was really excited. I was taking him and my goddaughter to their first game ever. Now we'll make it up to him. We'll do it again when things resume. But that's the experience I miss the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, my son hasn't been to a hockey game yet because it's always tough, because that's something he does with my dad. My dad's always in Florida for the, you know, bulk of the NHL season. But I remember taking them when they're little for the first time. That's something special when you're a dad. I took my girlfriend Ellen to her first hockey game last season, and she was all excited. I mean, you know, she said, you know, look, everybody's wearing the same costumes. We got okay, hon, that's a jersey, but sure. Sean, what are some of your favorite parts about going to live sporting events?
So interestingly enough, I mean, obviously I didn't add much value to the like first half of this pod, but I have been to at least one event from all the sports we talked about. But for me, it's really about the experience and camaraderie. And I also find that watching stuff live versus on TV is much more fascinating and enjoyable to watch. But at the end of the day, it's camaraderie, like, you know, and getting to the experience with other people. Like, you know, one of my favorite moments ever, and I'll still talk about this to this day, was, you know, I didn't really know Scott. I didn't really know JT or any of those guys last year when we went to WrestleMania, and getting to do that whole experience with them and getting drunk off a bottle of Jack Daniels was a blast for me.
Greatest feeling of my life.
Yeah, it was great, and I look forward to doing that again this year. So, and that got destroyed a little bit, but I love the camaraderie. But, you know, part of that experience is why I'm here now, is because I've met a lot of great people, and that's kind of the reason why I'm getting to do these pods, and it's just a great group of people. And I think it's all about the entourage and the experience of the people you get to interact with. I think mm-hmm. it's great. So.
Oh, yeah. Going with people you know is great. I mean, even with complete strangers. We used to be season ticket holders for the Giants. I couldn't tell you any of these fucking people's names. But they were the same people that I was going to games with when I was five till, you know, when, you know, the original Giant Stadium closed and they built MetLife. I mean, I just, hey, how are you? Great game. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, you're from New Jersey. You're the guy that always, you know, brings a big thing of hot chocolate. You're, you know, the guy that's we had this one guy called Two Beers because he always had two beers in his hand. And he was shit-faced by halftime every game. I mean, the man walked over and took a bite out of a foam arrowhead hat. Hammered. It was hysterical. Scott, what about you? What are some of your favorite parts about going to live sporting events?
I have to echo exactly what Shawnee said because he's exactly right. I mean, you know, last year I went to Madison Square Garden to see a non-WWE wrestling event for the first time ever. And again, the experience being with Sean and being with JR and Jenny and the rest of the gang was amazing. And I think a lot of it is just who you go with. Mm-hmm. And it's fun when you're going with people who are fans of one or both teams. You know, because that makes it so much more fun. I went to a Devils Bruins game down in Jersey, and you know, that was fun. I had my Bruins jersey on. I got heckled. It was a great game. Devils fans are the best, by the way. Devils fans are good fans, and they high-fived me. The Devils won the game. Brodeur won again. Big shock. But you know, now on the other hand, I went to a Giants Cowboys game in 2005, and everybody, well, Sean probably wouldn't care, but I know Lee and Andy laugh. And I had on a Roy Williams jersey, not the wide receiver, the horse collar cornerback. And I went to the bathroom to take a leak, and a Giant fan came over and stood next to me at the stall, and he just had, for some reason, had to turn and piss on my foot. Oh. So you know, it is what it is. But anyway, that kind of stuff. I mean, that's just one example. But I mean, it's a lot of it is just who you go with. Like, I've gone to Met games by myself, and it's brutal. You know, even when they're winning, it's like Sean said, it's who you go with. And if you're going with a bunch of people that are the same fans and everything, it's an amazing feeling. So for me, it's the camaraderie of the crowd. Good cold beer doesn't hurt, but the camaraderie of the crowd, the moment, like if it's a playoff game, it's something really special. Yeah. So for me, it's the crowd. I have to agree with Sean 100%. I think it's – and again, and Lee, I loved your example about going to something for the first time and seeing your people that you've gone with that you're taking that have never been to it before. That is so satisfying. Just like taking a child, like you said, taking your son and your goddaughter to their first Flyers game. I mean, that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. When you see the look in their eyes, it's something so amazing, you know? So a lot of it for me, beyond the teams, is the experience. Yeah. And like Sean said, WrestleMania will never be the same again for me after last year.
Yeah. Oh, same for me. I mean,
which makes this year hurt even more. Mm-hmm. So
it was for me. Yeah. It was the first big event I had gone to in, I went to WrestleMania 20. So what, like 16, 15 years, 16 years, whatever. What was last year? It was 35, right? Count. Yeah. So it was 15 years. So I had been there. It was my first event with the crew from Place to Be Nation. I brought Dylan. It was his first pay-per-view ever. It was a great time. Tremendous tailgate. A lot of fun being on the floor with my son. And, yeah, I mean, but some of the other things, like, I'm talking about, too, is, like, you know, when I go to a Yankee game and I hear the organ, kind of the cymbals up, you know, when I would walk into a Giant game, you know, it would be like, you know, we took the same route every time because we always parked in the same spot. So it was always, you know, the routine, you know, walking into... You know, how it's hard to describe, but like Lee, you know, when you walk into an arena for hockey,
yeah,
it feels weird. Like the air, there's because it's cold. It's just like a different feeling from like any other sport. So like those are the kind of things, like it's a sensory thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and every sport has that unique moment. I mean, and we all know, right? When you walk into a ballpark for the first time and see the yard, mm-hmm. right? When you walk into an NHL arena and the stands fade to the sides and the ice is there. When you walk into an NFL arena and the field opens up. You know, NBA is the same thing. You walk in and there's the court, man. Like there's an experience when you walk into these places. And I'll tell you this, you know, I worked at Madison Square Garden for several years. And keep in mind, I am not from New York. I'm a Philadelphia fan, so I should hate this place. And, you know, the world's most famous arena, there is something special about that arena. I've been to a lot of NHL NBA arenas, and there's just something different about Madison Square Garden when you step in there. And it's magical. I don't know how else to say it. You know what? Andy, actually, you're the perfect person to talk about this, but it's really like similar when you go to Disney World,
yeah.
Right? It's just there's something about it. There's an aura about it that's special. And, you know, God bless New York and what they're going through. I mean, the day MSG opens up again, there's going to be a special one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, like it's a good example. Like, when I walk into Six Flags with my kids, we go a couple times a season. It's great. You know, I know I'm going to get my thrill on. But when I went to Disney, and I was supposed to go to Universal this year in August, the window's closing, it looks like. But, you know, that there's that, like, just air and that feeling that you get. And it's just like, you know, for me, it's just like I'm home, you know. And
yeah.
I mean, and talk about MSG. Talk about MSG. Man. I mean, going to see a wrestling event at MSG is a different experience than seeing it at almost any arena. Especially when they have the entrance set up from the side, not like the big long ramp. It's just like the old house shows, like the MSG stuff that Scott and Justin talk about every other week on the, you know, some weeks on the Place to Be podcast. You know, and being lucky enough actually to have been back there, you know, when I was the ring announcer for that one house show. I mean, it's just something special. I mean, I've taken my kids to two wrestling events at the Garden. You know, because I thought, you know, Dylan has gotten so into wrestling, he needed to go to that. I wanted him to experience that. So, great stuff, guys. Awesome sports talk. But, you know, we're not done. We're halfway there. We got some pop culture, movies and sports. Sean's going to talk a little more. So,
got me in my wheelhouse finally.
Yes. So, with Scott Criscola, Lee Elias, Sean Kidd, I'm Andy Atherton. Stick around. We'll be right back here on Great Debate.
Fuck Ron Jaworski.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to episode 10 of The Great Debate here on the PDB Pop Feed. I'm your host, Andy Anson. I'm hanging out here with Scott Criscola, Lee Elias, and Sean Kidd. We've just done our sports segment, and now it's time for pop culture. We're going to talk movies, music, sports, all that kinds of, movies, music, TV, and all other kinds of fun stuff. So we're going to start off with some of the kind of things we've been doing a little bit lately. We're going to talk about a character, and we're going to kind of rank the actors or actresses or whoever have played this certain person. So we're going to talk about which actor has been the best big screen and TV Spider-Man, rank the ones who have portrayed him. Also, voice actors are eligible for these categories when we do these things. So we're going to start with Lee. Who's the best Spider-Man, in your opinion?
I love Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man 1 and 2. I thought he was a victim in Spider-Man 3 because of the writing. You know, it's funny. I was just having this debate with somebody today, and it's tough to do it. So I think Tobey Maguire easily is my number one pick. Andrew Garfield was a victim of a weird time. I didn't think he was a great Spider-Man. Those movies came out like in the middle of the MCU when Spider-Man was still with Sony, and they were trying to find a place, and it just didn't work. And then when you look at Tom Holland, I think he's a great Spider-Man. I just think he's had this benefit of leaning on the MCU heavily. I mean, you know, with Iron Man and the Avengers, and, you know, so when you're around those characters, you're obviously going to be heightened. And I'm not knocking his performance, but Tobey Maguire really established the character in live action. You know, he was the right guy at the right time for the role. I really bought into it. I thought he had the right humility to play Peter Parker. He had the right nerdiness. You know, I mean, like Tom Holland and Garfield were always a little bit too cool for me. I mean, and like Maguire really played the loser side well. Not to mention, I think Spider-Man 2 is one of the best comic book movies ever made. Mm-hmm. I think we don't talk about it enough anymore, but Tobey Maguire for me is by far the best Spider-Man.
Okay. All right. Sean, what about you?
So, yeah, Lee stole a little bit of the thunder there on Tobey Maguire. Everything he said about Tobey, I agree with. I think he was a perfect Spider-Man, the perfect balance of nerd and hero. And, you know, I just thought he was fantastic. Here's the thing. Like, I have 8 different Spider-Mans here.
Okay.
There's a long laundry list here. So, Tobey was number 1. Number 2 is Tom Holland. And, you know, I think it's a good point that he's really, you know, just kind of a product of the MCU and how he was introduced. And obviously it's a very different Spider-Man than what we're used to if you're a traditional Spider-Man reader. But I thought he did a great job. So my number 3 is where it starts getting interesting. So does anybody know who Paul Solis is?
No.
The one that did the TV show?
1967 Spider-Man, the one that the famous theme song came from. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, so he was the voice actor for that cartoon. So obviously that's my early introduction to Spider-Man, so I chose him at number 3. Number 4, my second favorite cartoon version of Spider-Man, his name was Ted Schwartz, did the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends voice, which was also a great cartoon growing up. So I picked him number 4. And then number 5, going with the cartoon theme, Fox had a Spider-Man cartoon in 94.
In the 90s, yeah.
Voiced by Greg Brady, Chris Barnes. He was Greg Brady in the Brady Bunch movie. I don't know if you guys knew that or not. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah, that's the one I grew up loving.
Yeah, so that was my number 5. Number 6, Neil Patrick Harris, Doogie Howser from Spider-Man on MTV in 2003. So I don't know if you guys remember that cartoon or not.
Well,
yeah,
you're going deep cuts here.
Oh, I'm a big Spider-Man nut.
This is his time to shine.
Yeah, number 7, Andrew Garfield. So he's the bottom of the barrel. I have nothing to say good about him. I don't think he made a good Spider-Man whatsoever. And yes, he might have been a victim of whatever time frame it was, but I thought he was awful. And then my favorite, probably the worst of it, but also one of my favorites, Nicholas Hammond from the late 70s Spider-Man that was on TV where he shot ropes. He didn't have webs. He shot ropes. God awful 70s version of Spider-Man, but number 1 in my heart. But he has to go last. So those are my 8.
Nice. So you didn't rank anybody from Spider-Verse like Chris Pine or
I didn't deal with any of that nonsense. No.
and it's a fair point to bring it up, though. That is a fair point to bring those
it
up.
It is a fair point. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Scott, what about you? What do you say about Spider-Man?
That show aired 13 episodes from September 19th, 1977 to July 6th, 1979. I actually like that show. The only thing I didn't like, and I do love the 60s Spider-Man, although wasn't Peter Parker supposed to be a teenager, yet he sounded like he was 38. I never totally understood that.
Well, that is true. That's kind of the glory of the time of the cartoon.
Oh, absolutely. I have those DVDs. Sadly, I can only get them in Region 2, UK. And I'm watching right now. I have 3 of them. I don't have the Spider-Man one. That's a separate set. But I have Thor. I have Iron Man, and I have Captain America. And it was those late 60s Marvel animateds were so good because
I'll go to my geekdom. I actually go on YouTube and watch them because they're all over YouTube too.
Yeah, they're so great. There's an awesome Submariner 2-disc set, but it's very low print and very expensive. This is a tough one because, I mean, Andrew Garfield sucked. And that was mostly because, I mean, that was a Sony cash grab. Like, they were about to lose the license. They had to slap together a couple movies, and they rushed them, and they were fucking garbage. I didn't think Tobey Maguire was really that bad in the first two. Spider-Man 3 could have been so much better if Sam Raimi was allowed to do a Spider-Man 4 so we could have a full 2-hour movie about Venom and not 16 minutes on Venom.
Yeah,
but
it's horrible.
It was horrible, but Toby's not bad. I think I really do like Tom Holland, but I agree with you guys. I think he got lucky. He's kind of like the Matt Leinart of fucking Spider-Man. He was a recipient of a good system. But I do think his 2 standalones. I mean, Far From Home. I actually haven't seen it yet. Believe
it's
it or
good.
Not,
that was a good flick.
It's a good movie.
Homecoming. Yeah. Was an extended MCU movie, so, you know, RD3's in it, or RD Jr.'s in it. So, you know, you're talking about kind of an extension of the Avengers, an extension of the MCU, so he kind of gets a little hand-holding there.
Well, I mean, so is the new one, though, too, because Far From Home takes place post-Endgame, so.
Yeah, so Far From Home has been called the epilogue of the Infinity Saga.
Yeah.
Correct.
Like, it's part of that saga, like, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, plus, you know, Favreau has a big part in it, so.
And Tom Holland, he is a good Spider-Man, but to me, like, you know, for someone that's grown up on Spider-Man, it's not my traditional Spider-Man. So for me, it's a little different. It's more about Spider-Man in the Avengers universe versus the Spider-Man that I know and love that I grew up, read, and watched as a kid. That's kind of
where I agree with John.
Here's a statement that, let's see if you guys agree. He's a great Spider-Man. I don't think he's a great Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was about to ask that. Because, like, we've talked about Batman and Superman on previous episodes, and we've talked about, like, you know, is one a better Bruce Wayne and a Batman, who's the best Clark Kent as opposed to Superman? So can you do that with Spider-Man Peter Parker? Is there a differentiation in some of these rankings based on the persona?
And McGuire does a great job with that. That's one of the things he does really well. Mm-hmm.
All right, Scott, back to your
rankings. Yeah, sorry. That's okay. I own the first two. I don't own Spider-Man 3. I got to find it. I think I can get it cheap on DVD for like $5. But I have to say Tobey Maguire number one and Tom Holland a very close number two. But I think Tom Holland has a lot more growing and he can expand. And I think you'll see more Spider-Man movies in the future once Sony just, you know, is bought by Disney and Disney owns everything.
along with Star Trek soon.
Along with Star Trek and everything else. The mouse's ears get larger. Yeah, I'll have to say Tobey Maguire, but I liked Sean's choice of the guy from the late 60s because those late 60s Marvel animateds are so fucking good because they're so cheesy with the slides just kind of, come on, Bucky, let's go! And then you just see,
they're so bad. They're so bad.
Bucky flying across the screen. It's so fucking good. It's so great.
They're so bad, they're great.
they really are. They're tremendous. Yeah. Just like these little cutouts. I can't believe I let Bucky die. I'm so depressed. It's like ridiculous. I have Cap on my mind, but I've watched Thor and I've watched Iron Man too. So they're really good. They're really good.
All right. Nobody said the Spider-Man from Electric Company.
Oh, man. How did I forget about that?
Thank God
Who
for
was
that,
though?
I don't know. I just know it was with Morgan Freeman.
Did Spider-Man ever talk on that show?
He always had a little pop-up word bubble above his head.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, we could also do rank the best and worst Venoms.
Ugh.
No? Topher Grace wouldn't win that one? Come on.
Nope. No, he wouldn't.
All right. So let's move on to the next one. This is something we like to do called Star versus Star. We take a couple of actors or actresses, and we kind of compare their body of work and kind of, like, you know, say which one you would rank above the other. We're looking at two guys. One guy's been around a little bit longer than the others, but they're kind of, like, you know, in the same vein. They're you know, action, basically action stars, but they're really good at comedy. So we're talking about Ryan Reynolds and Chris Hemsworth. We're going to start with Sean this time. Where would you rank one above the other based on body of work, or whose name goes on the marquee and you're like, I need to go see that movie?
So I put it in this context. So if a movie comes on the TV, I think about, who am I going to watch over, you know, one or the other? And there's one that always comes on TV that I'll watch probably more than another, and that's always Ryan Reynolds, because, you know, Ryan Reynolds has been in some pretty classic, you know, comedy movies that are probably not, you know, what I would say, there's not a lot of couth in some of his comedies in his early work, right? So you have the movie Waiting, where he works at a restaurant, which I think is fantastic. You know, you have Van Wilder. The other day I watched Just Friends, which is one of my all-time favorite, like, hidden gem movies that not a lot of people have seen, which is fantastic. And he's just got The Proposal is another one of my favorites. So he's got a big body of work that I really, really like, and I'll watch anytime it comes on the TV versus Chris Hemsworth. Okay, I'll watch the Thor movies, and then the only one I really can think about is the Vacation remake where he has the big hog. So I can't really – there's no comparison for me. It's Ryan Reynolds in a Runaway. Right. So,
Scott, what about you?
I have to agree with Sean. I remember Ryan Reynolds when he was on some teen show on Nickelodeon in the late 80s. It was early 90s.
Can't say that on television.
No, it wasn't You Can't Do That on Television. It was another one. It was another thing. You Can't Do That on Television was Alanis Morissette.
Well, I think he was, wasn't he dating her at some point, though?
Yes,
I think
he was.
They were involved.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they were married.
Man. Her and Ryan Reynolds and then Joey from Full House. I don't know what she's doing, but anyway.
Canucks. Those damn Canucks.
I know. Yeah, really?
And she ends up playing God. She ends up playing God. Go figure.
I gotta see what the name of this fucking show was. He has his own filmography. Oh, wow. You know, when you have your own filmography page on Wikipedia separate from your bio, you've made it. Yes. Let me see. The TV. 15, it was called, from 91 to 93. And for some reason, I watched him. I'm like, oh, okay. And then years later, I'm like, wow, that's – I think it was Blade Trinity. And I'm like, oh, shit, that's the guy from that show. That's the kid that was on that show.
Oh, my God. I forgot he was even in that movie.
Yeah, that was that was like the start of him being like a buff action hero. Like everybody knew him from Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place. Or they got rid of the Pizza Place after the first season. So
I have to go with, because I agree with Sean. Take away Thor, and Chris Hemsworth's filmography is.
What, you didn't like Red Dawn?
No. There's only one Red Dawn.
Yes, there's only one Red Dawn.
I concur.
Only one Red Dawn. Wolverine. But here's the first of all, Sean, the movie you were talking about, Waiting.
Yes. A great Waiting. Movie, underrated, very not couth.
He was in Van Wilder, of course, the in-law. He was in the remake of The In-Laws. Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. You know what I liked him in? And this is for me from a horror perspective. He was an excellent George Lutz in the remake of The Amityville Horror. Yeah. I thought, and if you didn't see the original, highly recommend it. James Brolin was excellent in that movie. Maybe the only life choice he regrets is marrying Barbara Streisand. But he was really great in the Amityville Horror. But Ryan Reynolds was tremendous in the remake of that in 2005?
Yeah, good call.
2005, yeah, 2005. Just Friends. Smoking Aces he was in, which is a great movie. What else is he in? Deadpool. Although his Deadpool in Origins is fucking garbage.
Yes.
And you know what? This might be a hot take, or maybe a cold take, but I didn't mind him in Green Lantern. I didn't mind it. It wasn't as unwatchably awful as it seemed. I don't have a problem with Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm. Stay tuned on that one, Scott. I have a take on that later.
Yeah, I didn't have an issue with him in Green Lantern. I thought he was fine. But in terms of the general filmography, I got to go with Ryan Reynolds. Mm-hmm. Much more comedies. Well, you take away Thor, and Hemsworth's filmography is pretty thin.
Hemsworth has like a much – his filmography is a lot shorter. But, I mean, Men in Black International was not good at all.
No, it was
but,
terrible.
I mean, he was pretty funny in the Ghostbusters – I don't know what you want to call it. Remake? Recall?
Debacle?
Yeah, debacle.
No, actually – if it wasn't called Ghostbusters, it would have been hilarious.
Yeah,
I mean that.
It would have been. It's, and they weren't, you know, they actually busted ghosts more in that movie. In the originals, they were more trapped. They were ghost trappers, but that's another discussion. But, you know, he was pretty good in, also talking about horror movies, The Cabin in the Woods. You know, he was pretty good in.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Yeah. Lee, what about you? What do you say?
So I'm going to try and not say what everybody else said in terms of why, but I think that this I'll start by saying this.
Chris Hemsworth.
That was a great film too.
Oh, shut
listen, up. Chris Hemsworth is not Chris Hemsworth without Ryan Reynolds. That's how far away Ryan Reynolds runs away with this competition. For me, it's a couple reasons. Okay, I've been watching Ryan Reynolds since Nickelodeon, but really Van Wilder was the first movie I've seen him in. Where I mean, and again, that movie did not age well by any means, but it was super funny to me when I was, you know, watching it the first time. I was in college when they came out. It was phenomenal. This is what I find amazing about Ryan Reynolds. The guy does that Deadpool and Origins, which he warned the studio. This is why I love the guy. Warn the studio, this is going to piss people off. This is not the story of Deadpool. This is not what the fans are going to like. You are straying away from the canon of the character. It's going to be miserable. And he was totally right. Then he did Green Lantern and got ripped apart for that, whether you like the movie or not. So this guy has failed at this point as two comic book characters, then fights his way all the way to playing Deadpool the right way, which he had heavy executive production role in playing that role. And you realize that this guy, Ryan Reynolds, has been playing Deadpool since Van Wilder. If you watch Van Wilder,
that's a great
if
point.
You watch his movie,
true.
If you watch him in any movie he's been in, he's been Deadpool the whole time. And then to be able to take a character that breaks the fourth wall, which is one of the most dangerous things you can do in a film, and to nail it, not once, not twice, but hopefully three times whenever a new Deadpool movie comes out. And I cannot wait to see him blatantly talk about Sony and Marvel in that movie. All right? Like, that is phenomenal to me. I mean, what he's been able to do, not to mention his range from action film to comedy to serious roles. The thing I will give Chris Hemsworth credit for, and this is why I say he is like a descendant of Ryan Reynolds, is – And this was done so subtly, I'm not sure people noticed it, but they were able to take Thor from Thor 1 and Thor 2, who was a serious character in the movie. He was not comedic at all, right? He was just an
action
movie.
I know exactly where you're going. I know exactly where you're going.
Yeah, yep. He was not comedic at all, and then they took this risk of pretty much saying, listen, let's redo Thor like he's part of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And essentially, when you get to Ragnarok, which is one of the best – if not the best Marvel movie made so far, and I am making that statement, okay? You've taken this serious action hero and essentially completely transitioned him into the Guardians world and the Guardians type of humor successfully without anybody freaking noticing, really. Like, you don't hear people talk about that. Completely changed the character, and he did that successfully. So I give him credit for that, but Reynolds did it first. And again, Reynolds fought for Deadpool. He fought to get that character right. And as a comic book nerd, as a major Deadpool fan, and again, I was a Deadpool fan before people, you know, who saw the movie knew who he was. I know a lot of people who didn't know Deadpool before the movies came out. I really appreciate that for him fighting through two failed comic book roles and then coming out on top and doing it right. I mean, you could say three failed comic book roles if you want to put Blade Trinity in there, which again, there's another movie where he's Deadpool. He's been Deadpool his whole career. Ryan Reynolds wins it. He doesn't win it by a little bit. He wins it by 6 football fields.
Yep.
Well, if we were going to come up with somebody to compare Ryan Reynolds to, wouldn't it be like is there anybody you could think of?
Yikes.
I mean, is this guy so up above?
It's hard because Ryan, he has his niche, and he's very good at his niche, and that's why people like him. So it's really hard to compare that to somebody.
I mean, is RDJ a fair comparison? I know Chris Evans,
I'll watch a movie of Ryan Reynolds that comes on before I'll watch another RDJ. So it's really hard. It's hard because Ryan Reynolds is so good at who he is. So.
Well, again, are we talking in just a comic book movie role, or are we talking like overall?
Overall filmography.
No, overall, I love his movies. So
Robin Williams, maybe.
That's not a bad comparison. Maybe.
I mean, that guy had unbelievable range.
Yeah.
I was devastated when he died. You know what I mean?
I think everybody was. Everybody.
Yeah, I mean, how many celebrities? I mean, there's celebrities out there that die and go, "Oh, that's sad." I mean, when Robin Williams died, I was really, really upset. I mean, that really hit me because of my childhood. But like if we're talking about someone who can do action, comedy, drama, and everything in between, I think Robin Williams is the only one. I mean, it's great action film Popeye. It was filmed in Malta.
I liked Popeye.
I've been to Malta. I've been to the set. I've been where they filmed that movie, which like no one's done.
That's one of the first movies I saw in a theater when I was 7 years old. Just FYI. So
I saw it in a theater too. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Like I guess modern day. I don't have anybody to compare him to. Modern day. That's what I'm struggling with.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just asking because I try to do these. I try to find fair. Well, we did The Rock, and we compared him to Tom Cruise when we did.
Okay,
sorry.
Well, I mean, you know, Tom Cruise. I mean, Mission Impossible. Those are so much fun. Those movies. They're kind of like, you know, the laws of physics don't matter like in the Fast and Furious, but
You know, The Rock lost the role of Jack Reacher to Tom Cruise, right?
Yeah. I saw something in a news feed in the last day or so about something like that. I didn't click on it, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I did, apparently.
All right. So we'll think more about these Star Wars
stars. Favorite underrated RDJ movie?
The Scanner Darkly.
Chaplin.
Chaplin. I was about
that's
to say
underrated?
I think so.
I think it is.
He won an Oscar for that.
Yeah, but I think it's forgotten. Because RDJ has had like two careers. His early career, then Coke, and then Tony Stark.
Well, okay, listen. If we're talking about forgotten, that was one of the best performances in cinema.
It was.
But I didn't group it in with like underrated because right. that I mean we won an Oscar for that.
How about Back to School?
Blows my entire French torch.
Not the first time he's played a dick.
We're you science. Know,
and then he's in Johnny B. Goode, and he's in Less Than Zero, so he's in all those great 80s movies when he's all coked out. So there are some good
Less
movies.
Than Zero is a great movie.
Oh, Kiss, yes. Kiss, Bang, Bang.
Yes. So there is some good stuff there.
I wanted to kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang, Jamie Gertz. Oh, I know it's for movies, but.
Too.
All right, so.
And Lost Boys drink Jamie Gertz.
That's right.
Yes. Lost Boys, Jamie Gertz.
Sorry. Yes.
All right. Underrated William Patrick. No, I'm only kidding. Underrated Corey Haim movies. No.
Oh, they're all great. Move on.
License to Drive.
So good.
Green Little Dream. I love that.
Little Dream. So good.
Yeah.
Blown Away. Lucas. Anyway.
Well, Blown Away is good for different reasons.
Yes.
But. Yeah, exactly. It's not her. Yeah, it's not him.
Yeah, it's not him.
All right, so, Scott, we're going to start with you. Who are some musical artists that you've tried to get into, but you just can't?
This one, probably because I was in radio when he was hot and when his band was hot, but Matchbox 20. I tried to listen to the shit out of that, and I just fucking hated him and that stupid hair and his fucking necklace thing. I absolutely – and then Smooth. And then I worked at three radio stations with three different formats, and they all played Smooth. And I wanted to – and I love Santana, but I wanted to fucking punch Rob Thomas after that song.
It's a great choice, by the way. That's
thank
good.
You. Yeah. Thank you. I just couldn't. Yeah, I would say Maroon 5, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any of those kind of bands that all sound the same. I'll tell you one. This is an older artist, and I don't hate him, but considering how much of him I listened to when I worked at the liquor store when I was in college, because my boss, the guy who owned the store, loved him, and he used to play a ton of his stuff, and I tried Frank Zappa. Frank Zappa. My boss played Joe's Garage to death. And other than Yellow Snow, I just couldn't get into it. It was – I mean, I don't mind some experimental pop, prog rock, like Yes, Jethro Tull kind of thing. But Frank Zappa was just way too weird. Way too weird for me. But I tried.
Why does it hurt when I pee?
As long as I get the little golden shower. What? What the hell did he just say?
Got it from the toilet seat.
Jesus Christ.
It's so weird. It's so
it's
weird.
It's a real song for you as you're listening. It's a
it
real
is?
Song.
Yeah. Don't you know
it. Yeah.
Very strange. Like him as a person. Great documentary on Showtime, Showtime Anytime on their On Demand about Frank Zappa. But because I'll eat up anything that involves music. But I just tried to listen to it and I couldn't do it. But Rob Thomas and Matchbox 20 is number one, only because I just got punched in the face with it over and over again when I was in the business.
All right. Lee, what about you? What are some musical artists that you can't get into?
Yeah, so I love music. I love music. And I mean everything from classical to metal to rock to country to even rap and hip-hop. And there's one artist that is very popular for some reason, unbeknownst to me. Like I took a little more of an aggressive, angry approach to this question. I just do not understand how Cardi B has become famous and is a pop star because her music sucks. I mean, it sucks. Now, if she were here, she'd say, well, I sold so many millions of dollars and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I don't give a shit. Your music sucks. It contributes nothing. You contribute nothing. I can't stand you. I can't get into you. And I don't like it that, you know, nothing you do contributes to the betterment of anything. So, Cardi B,
that's great.
Cardi B, you are not for me. What's that? You guys remember that line from Billy Madison? The whole world is dumber now that you have spoken. Yes. May God have mercy on your soul.
Good.
All right. Sean, you got any?
So for those that interact with me in various chats or conversation, they know I like to go against the grain in terms of popularity when I think's popular and what I think is shit. Mm-hmm. These might be two unpopular takes, but there's two bands, and I also too love different varieties of music growing up, et cetera, et cetera. And this is kind of two bands that have been around a long time. Number one with the bullet is Rush. I don't get Rush. and I know that's going to be an unpopular take, but, I don't get their music. I don't get why Geddy Lee is so great. I think the drummer's great, Neil Peart. I can't say enough. I think he's great. But, like, I listen to a Rush song, and I think to myself, how do they have a Bust Up album? Because all their songs sound the same, so there must be one song on the Bust Up. So Rush would be number one with a bullet for me. I think that my favorite song by Rush is Take Off to the Great White North from Strange Brew from an awesome comedy movie.
Oh, my God, Strange Brew.
Yes,
Strange Brew. I love Strange Brew.
So that song from that movie is great. Beyond that, Rush can kiss my ass. U2 is another one who I just – and by the way – I did go to a Rush concert with my friend. It was probably, I think it was during their last tour, just to go out and say, hey, you know what? Let me give it a shot. Live, they were very, very good. I'll give them that, but I just cannot get into their music. But they put on a really great live show.
I've seen them twice.
Yeah. So U2 is another one. I've seen them live, and it's kind of the same thing. You know, it's kind of like when you go to those live experiences, it's the experience, and you get into it. But my high school ex-girlfriend was into U2, and she lived and breathed by U2, and she was all cheesy and romantic, and it was always about U2 and Bono music, and it was a bunch of horse shit. I just can't.
I am kind of hit and miss with U2. One of my best friends is a huge U2 fan, and he's gone to see them like 20, 30 times, whatever it is, 8 times on one fucking tour. I can't.
I was done. I can't.
I'm good. There are a couple of U2 songs I love, but as their general whole body of work, no.
I gotta ask too. Yep. With your answer on Rush, does that mean you hate AC/DC as well?
No, I love AC/DC
because they've made the same song 100 times.
We could have that debate, but that would take a little while.
I'm quoting the band. I'm quoting the bang. Angus Young said that.
Well, you know, Angus Young is because they fucking rule. So
yeah, no.
Fuck Angus Young. AC/DC rocks.
Well, I mean, Linkin Park is like the new version of that. Every fucking Linkin Park song sounds the same. I mean,
horrible.
I mean, the end of every Transformers movie has a Linkin Park song that it's the same fucking song, it sounds like.
I have another band, actually, if I may. I have another band I want to add. Because, I mean, I'll say this, Shawnee. I was a late bloomer on Rush. I like Rush a lot. Okay. But when I was a kid, I liked Tom Sawyer and Limelight, and that was pretty much it. But I got to like them later on in my life, and now I actually like them. But
okay.
One band – but I could see your opinion, though. Same thing with U2, and I like U2, and I've seen them once. Are you talking about Pathé?
Yes.
Because I saw U2 with him. Mm-hmm. One band that everybody in the – like if you're a classic rock fan, everybody in the world loves. But they, to me, like Rush, every song sounds the same, and that's Pink Floyd.
Oh.
Mm. I've listened to Dark Side of the Moon. I've listened to Wish You Were Here. I've listened to The Wall. I don't get it.
Just like me with Rush, I see your point in that, actually. But, you know, it's different. Like Dark Side of the Moon, I absolutely love that album. And I know people have made fun of this in the past about the whole Wizard of Oz and Dark Side of the Moon thing. But you have not lived until you've gotten drunk on bourbon and whiskey and really watched the album from the start of Wizard of Oz. It really is kind of a cool experience.
Interesting.
Even though it's a theory and it's bullshit, but it is fun to kind of do that. But I totally get your point on the Pink Floyd. But See, I feel the exact opposite, where you like Rush, I like Pink Floyd, but I get it. I get your point.
Oh, no, I get your point about Rush. Absolutely. Yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. But I do like On the Turning Away.
Oh, well, but it makes... But,
I acknowledge your point, sir. I see your side.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not normally that agreeable, so that's...
No, you're not. You're not called Shit Take Sean for no reason.
Exactly. I thought he was going to say, like, that fucking bitch Hermione starts singing, God, screw her!
Yeah, let's not talk... Y'all, we should have done a Harry Potter debate, but we can do that later. Move on.
You'd rather talk about sports.
I would, yes. Correct.
Sean, you got any others?
Bands?
Any music artists that you just, you know, you can't get into?
Man. Those are my top two. I mean, I'm pretty open to most music, but... And by the way, modern day music, I just don't listen to it because I'm sure I'd have a bunch of shit takes on that. I don't have any opinions on modern
what
day.
What Lee said about Cardi B, I pretty much like about every artist that's come out since 2015.
Yeah, so. I'm like, that's since 99. So
Pretty much. 99. Pretty much.
Yep. Well, that's because there hasn't been an original thing where members of the band actually play the music since 1999.
There hasn't been an instrument played since 1999.
I tell that to my younger friends. Back in my day, they used to play, record, and write all of their old music, believe it or not. And they didn't use old songs to make their new songs.
Like, for me, like, Steely Dan, I just...
Oh, I do have one. I do have one more, and it's an 80s band, and everyone that likes their music. I hate Tears for Fears. Like, I don't get Everyone Wants to Rule the World. I don't get Shout. Head Over Heels is okay, but I cannot stand Tears for Fears. I just can't. I don't get it. I didn't like them.
As long as you're not talking bad about Level 42, right, Scott?
Level 42 had a good song.
And he likes all those niche 80s bands.
That's a callback to the 80s song tournament preview. Yeah.
Don't talk bad about Sade or, you know.
Shout out to theme
song. Well, that's a great song because of Rick Rude.
So. Exactly.
I mean, there are certain like Amy Winehouse I couldn't stand. Like,
if
Rehab comes on the radio, I'm like, ah.
Yeah,
I'm like shaking. I'm shaking like Edge. I'm shaking like Edge Selling. You know, what I mean, whenever you hear her music, and she just looking at her, just oh God, God rest her soul. But you know, anybody, any other musical artist that you know you kind of buck the trend to? Anybody?
Those are my big one.
Yeah, those are my big two.
I mean, not the hugest rap fan either. Like you know, Jay-Z. P. Diddy,
Yeah, but that's different though, Andy. That's a genre.
No, there are some rap artists I do like, you know, but I just can't. If I hear a Jay-Z song.
80s rap, I was into all kinds of rap music growing up, and I liked 80s rap. Like,
yeah.
I liked LL Cool J. I liked DJ Jazzy Jeff. I was into Young MC. I was into all that stuff, but again, past 99, I just shut it out, and then I don't have to worry about it.
Well, I can't stand Jay-Z for one line in that Empire State of Mind song, so.
Yeah,
when he says he made a Yankee hat more famous than a Yankee, yep. I'm like, yeah, fuck you.
Biz Markie.
Yeah, Biz Markie.
Biz Markie.
A positive K.
early Snoop Dogg was really good, too. Early Snoop Dogg.
Yeah. Dr. Dre, The Chronic. What a great album.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. Let's see. We'll lead off with Lee this time. What are some TV series you wish you had time to binge? Would it be for the first time or a rewatch?
Well, it's a tough question for the first time because there's a lot that would go into that. So I'm going to go like TV shows that I loved that I would binge again. One of them, and this was a show from my childhood that I really loved, was Quantum Leap. I really loved that show. Mm-hmm. I love the way it was written.
Yeah, really good choice.
They don't make shows like that anymore. It's actually – it'll lead into a future question here, but it's a show I'd love to see remade. Because I think it would be interesting now that show came out in the 80s, you could add the last 30 years to time periods to go back to. You know, there were some episodes, really iconic episodes in there with like JFK. The last episode was really somber but good. I really loved that show. I did binge watch Lost, and I'm happy I did. I'm happy I did because I don't know how anybody enjoyed that show without binge watching it. Like, I don't know how people watch that every single week.
It was hard. Like,
yeah. It was very hard. Yeah. I started watching that show like right before I think the second to last or last episode came out, and I binge watched it the whole way through like in a month. Because again, binge watching it's awesome because you don't have to wait. You don't have to wait for the ending. You just kind of keep going, and you know, you see it when you see it. Breaking Bad was another one I really enjoyed. I could binge watch that again. I'm a huge fan of like Star Trek and stuff like that, but they're not shows I'd want to binge watch. You know what I mean? Like, because you know, the shows where every episode's a little different. And Quantum Leap had that, but it also had an ongoing storyline. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That kind of tied itself nicely as an end at the end. It's tough to think of shows I haven't seen that I want to binge watch because I would have watched them. You know what I mean? I think Quantum Leap is a show. I love it. I miss it. I wouldn't mind seeing it again, and it would bring back a nice piece of nostalgia that would feel good right now.
Awesome. Sean, what about you?
So, you know, I was going to say it was hard for me to think of one that I haven't watched that I want to binge watch because I'm like, you know, I'm a creature of habit when it comes to TV shows. So trying to get me to watch a new show like Tiger King, which was pretty funny, actually. So I got to give you props for that.
I'm still holding out on that one.
It's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, me too, by the way.
It's a shit show, but it's worth watching.
It's a shit show or it's a shit show?
It's a shit show, but it's fun to watch. The two that I really liked, and I loved both these shows so much. So one, I actually binge watched literally in a weekend in a snowstorm, and it was 24. The first season of 24, when I watched it, just like blew my mind. Jack Bauer, the whole saga of him. I think the first two episodes are first two seasons of 24. I would love to go back and binge watch it. After that, it became kind of the same show for the rest of its run. Mm-hmm. But the first two seasons are really great. And then my second one is Alias. I loved Alias.
Yes.
And it's kind of the same dynamic as a 24, except with the female and Jennifer Gardner and, you know, the whole Sidney Bristow and, you know, the whole secret CIA hub that they're not really CIA, but they're evil and it's run by a really evil bastard. And it's just such a great show. And I want to go back and at least watch it. Like, I can watch that whole show. It's such a great show.
Yeah. I actually own all the seasons of that because, you know, when I finished Buffy and Angel, I was like, oh, I'm like, all right, give me another strong female-led show. And I got into Alias. I literally, this is like when I think like Dylan was just born. He's a baby. So I was up late at all kinds of odd hours. And I think I watched the entire, was it the third season, the Melissa George year?
Yes.
She was. I watched that in like five nights. I think I binged the whole season. So I hear you on that. I got you back there, Sean.
Yeah, so I'm actually I also have a DVD set of it, and I haven't gone back to rewatch it. But it's one that if I had the time to, I definitely would. Mm-hmm. It's great.
All right. Scott, what about you?
Well, I agree with Sean on 24. I would eat that shit up in a heartbeat. I loved that show. Parks and Rec. I would go back to that in a heartbeat. That show was so goddamn funny. What a cast. They were just so loosey-goosey and fancy-free. They looked like they were legitimately having fun. I really enjoyed Parks and Rec, and I didn't think I would, but I did a lot. You know what's funny? I'm gonna. It's funny you say that. It's funny I'm about to say this, Andy, since you gave me the seasons. But one show that I tried to binge watch, and I feel like time didn't age it well, is Smallville.
Oh,
I loved Smallville, and I just tried to watch it, and I got about halfway through season three, and I'm like, it's not aging well. It didn't, and I love that show, and I love Kristen Krug, Hubba Hubba, and I love Erica Durance, Hachi Machi. Mm-hmm. But just, maybe it's because the Arrowverse shows are so different that's almost too CW, you know? Can I expand it to shows that I'm binge-watching that I've never seen?
Yeah.
Because the reason I'm saying that is because one show right now, since all of the current shows are now stalled, because what a shock, coronavirus. But I never thought I'd like the show, but I was looking on Hulu one day, and I'm popping through, and I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. And I have to thank the Queen Bee for this one. Andy knows who the Queen Bee is. Mm-hmm. Actually, Andy and Sean both knew who the Queen Bee is. She recommended this to me, and And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll watch it. And I'm about halfway through about a third of the way through season two, and I'm actually liking it. And that's X-Files.
Oh.
And one of the reasons I was not going to jump on that show is I hate David Duchovny and his weird shaped head. But believe it or not, and I love, and I like Gillian Anderson, and I like Mitch Pileggi too. It's not bad. I'm liking it. Again, I think I like the whole that Fox 90s look. That, like, you know, bright ties and, you know, dark scenes and funky music and shit. And, you know, every fifth episode you have to have a vampire and, you know, because that was how that was in the 90s.
Better than 21 Jump Street for sure.
So. Yeah, yes. That's definitely true.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm about eight episodes into season two. And I'm like, you know what? I'm actually enjoying this. I'm happy. The other show that I've jumped on right now. And I can't believe, for me being a horror fan, and I didn't jump on this show when it was on, but now I am, is American Horror Story.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm coming up on the season two finale of the Asylum season, and I've loved it. Season one, The Murder House, was good, kept me interested, but this season two with Asylum, I'm all in. And I know, Sean, that I'm apparently going to enjoy season four of The Freak Show.
Yes.
I heard that one's awesome,
yes.
But I'm all in. So so those are two shows that are over. Although is American Horror Story technically over?
Right? Well, they're anthologies, so they're separate.
I mean, the season doing another season is what I mean.
Yes, they are doing another season.
Okay, so that's technically that's still going on, so that doesn't count. Mm-hmm. But I am binge watching that off Netflix. And I'm also currently watching a lot of the animated series. I just watched. And I'll watch it again down the line, besides Batman, the animated, all these animated stuff that I have on DVD and Blu-ray, Batman, the animated series, Superman. I'm about to open up my, Justice League. I just watched, and I know Sean's going to get excited about this. I just watched, Voltron Lion Force.
Oh, fantastic.
I'd watch that again.
Love Lion Force.
Love that. I'm going to take a breather and then I'm going to hop on Vehicle Force. And then I also have Fleet of Doom and I have Beast King Go Lion, which is the Japanese show that Voltron came from, which is apparently is a hell of a lot gorier and more violent than Voltron was. But yeah, I loved Lion Force. So good.
Yes.
So anyway, that's my list.
Yeah. For me, you know, I try to avoid getting sucked into too many shows. So I've only seen a handful of episodes of Parks and Rec, The Office, 30 Rock, Curb. I got into for a little while, but those are all, you know, and those are, you know, half hour comedies are so much easier. So once I hit the ground with one of them, that's also a thing. Like, my OCD, like, will get me, like, oh my God, I got to watch so many episodes a day. You know, I got to get through this. But a couple of dramas, Deadwood, I'm dying to.
Yeah, like, I got to hop on that.
You know, the thing is, too, like, for me, like, you know, with, you know, between work, kids, whatever, doing shows, you know, I want to be awake. I want to focus on, these 1 hour dramas because I want to, like, you know, like, even, well, I mean, you could be as wake as, you know, have 1,000 cups of coffee. You won't understand fucking Westworld, you know. Anyway, but
I hated it. I watched one season. I fucking
I haven't started the season yet.
I love
God, I'm with you, man. I made it through one season and I tapped out. I'm with you.
I watched the first two seasons. I have the current episodes in my DVR right now, although they're probably on HBO Go or now, whichever the fuck it is. But yeah, I haven't gotten the strength to start watching it yet. But yeah, the Deadwood, like, I really want to see. Justified is another one on my list. I mean, in terms of going back, I'm trying to get my daughter to watch Buffy, you know, with me, because season three, hands down, season three of Buffy is one of the greatest, like, you know, fantasy seasons of television, in my opinion. Awesome villain. I mean, so much shit happens in that season, and then, you know, great ending, and Angel leaves for a spinoff, and it's just so good. And, you know, maybe Lost. I don't know. I mean, I want to see it, like, you know, from a different perspective, you know. Now, I mean, if Jessica ever wants to binge it, maybe I'll do it with her. And
I love Lost, but I feel like the last season and the final episode just kind of ruined the whole saga for me. So I'm tentative to go back and rewatch.
I can't. I agree with you, Sean. I agree with you 1,000,000%. I absolutely cannot.
Yeah.
My brother got me to watch it, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool, and Evangeline Lilly, Hachimachi,
yeah.
Oh, I'm Elizabeth Mitchell, though, all the way.
I know one binge rewatch. I can't believe I didn't say this. And I mentioned it, Sean. I think you were in the chat yesterday when I said it. I'm definitely going to go back to The Sopranos at some point.
Yes, there's one, too. Absolutely.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
You guys are bitching about the end of Lost and not The Sopranos?
No, I'm not.
Nope. No, we're not.
To be fair, I had no problem with either ending, and you can debate me on that. I thought they were actually both really good.
Yeah. I mean,
I think the ending of Lost, and I don't want to spoil it, because I felt like it was a cop-out, because that's kind of where I thought it was heading to begin with, and I felt they took the easy way out at the end. That's how I felt.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's fair. I mean, I kind of respected that, believe it or not. That they, you know, because it was very comfortable the way that show ended. Like, I was at peace. Keep in mind again, though, guys, that I did say I binge watched that the first time I saw it. So yeah. I hadn't invested 7 or 8 years into it.
Well, I did. That, it pissed me off.
Yeah, that to be fair to you, that might have pissed me off if I had to wait for that. I thought the end of The Sopranos, which again, no spoilers, was one of the most ambitious and brilliant endings in television history.
I remember looking at it, and then I went, David Chase, you dick. And then I went, you're such a fucking genius.
No, yeah. I did too. Yeah. And then I said the same thing. I was pissed, and I'm like, oh, wait, I think I get it. Yeah. I don't know if I really got it or not, but I think I do. So it was okay.
Yeah. It's not like the end of Inception where, you know, Christopher Nolan's like, oh, the ending is whatever you want it to be.
Yes.
I'm like, fuck you. I want to know what happens.
Nope. Absolutely hate
no, but,
so much.
Yeah, Sopranos. I mean, and again, I think if you watch that last season, we all know what happened or what the ending represents. But I thought it was brilliant. It got everybody talking. But like there was a movie that came out. It's like The Sopranos, man. It's over. Get on with it. Move on with your life. The whole world stopped for a week for that. That's what old world problems used to look like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nice forgetting Sarah Marshall, Paul. All right, so Sean, what is an older movie that should be remade or updated, and what are some classics that are untouchable?
So I need to clarify this real quick. Okay. So what I'm asking you, Andy, what designates it as old? You know what I'm saying? Because like this could be different depending on who you're asking. I'm sorry to cut everybody off, but like what designates an older movie? Is there a time date that we're talking about?
Like something from a different generation. Like totally current generation has no no, like people like my kids. Like my kids have no emotional connection to like whatever movie because, you know, like it's like, all right, let me put an example. When we talked about it earlier, the Ghostbusters with the ladies. The night before we saw that, I showed my daughter the original. It was on AMC or something like that, just to show her because she had never seen it before. Then we went to see the other one. And then after we got it, I'm like, which one did you like better? She said, the new one. And I said,
of course.
Because
there's no Star Wars fans.
Because she didn't have an emotional connection. No, she loves the old Star Wars more than the new ones, trust me.
Well, that's because you raised her.
Yes, I raised her correctly.
I know other people.
Yeah. But that's kind of like what I'm looking at, like, you know. Like
I get,
because there are people that say, "Oh, why they remake that?" Well, because you know, newer, you know, audiences don't have a frame of reference; they have no relationship to that movie, only through what their parents or whoever, or maybe or film class or something may have given them. But that's kind of what I'm looking at.
My other question on this topic would also be: we talk about yes, remade or updated. So, does that count like Indiana Jones 5? Like, you know what I mean? Like, are we talking about new cast, new stories?
Continuer. No, that's a franchise.
Continuer. Yeah, that's kind of
so that does not count, no. Right? That's what I'm making sure I understand because I don't want to. Okay, cool. Thank you for clarifying. I'm sure the audience appreciates like, it. This is your pseudo host, Lee, helping Andy up.
like I would put Indiana Jones. Like if they were like just to say, you know what, fuck it, we're starting over with a new actor. I would be like, that's on the untouchable list. Kind of
absolutely.
Thing. Yeah,
totally agree.
All right,
just making sure.
All right,
just make sure I understand.
All right, can I proceed now?
We'll proceed now with the first person. Here we go.
All right, Sean.
Well, I don't know what the fuck we solved in that whole dynamic, but I'm just going to go with the two that I think they're the right answers. So there's two, and they're two very different genres and two very different time frames. So I'm one of those believers that I think there's too many remakes. Mm-hmm. I believe originals are where it should be, and I think some don't need to be remade, and there are two. I mean, there's some really good ones, to Scott's point. Amityville Horror was a great remake, but man, the first one was so damn good. I don't even know if it needed to be remade, you know? So I'm going to go with two movies, and it's interesting. Scott brought this one up earlier, which is crazy. I picked Green Lantern because I feel like Ryan Reynolds wasn't bad in the role, but I feel like the character he portrayed is not who Hal Jordan is if you read the comics and grew up with the comic.
You're right.
And I feel like that – and you know what? Here's the other thing. I hate the newest Shazam movie, and I feel like a lot of people love it. I hate it for the exact same reason I don't like Green Lantern. Shazam is not a comedy. It's not a buffoon. You know what I mean? And I feel the same way about Green Lantern. I feel like they shit the bed with the movie, and they didn't take it seriously, and it turned into a comedy, and that's why everybody hated it. I would love to see an updated Green Lantern movie because I think what they did with Arrow on TV was really, really cool with the Arrow show. I think they did a great job with the Green Arrow. And I mean, I could have dragged on a long time, but I think it was great. I would love to see something similar with Green Lantern. So, Scott, great, that's why I wanted to bring that up, because I know you brought it up earlier that you thought the movie wasn't that bad.
I agree. Okay. So, okay.
And then the other one, you know, it's one of the first books I read in school, and I remember reading the book. And then as part of the book, we had to watch the movie, and it was To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I really love lawyer films. And, like, you know, one of my favorite movies that, you know, a lot of people don't talk about is A Time to Kill with Matthew McConaughey. And I feel like To Kill a Mockingbird is a similar in terms of racism at the time, fair trials, et cetera, like that. And I know I'm probably aging myself a little bit. Gregory Peck was in that. It was amazing in that movie.
Yes, he was.
Yep. But I feel like that could be updated and be really, really good. So if I had to see something remade, it would probably be that movie. But at the same time, I think the original was so good. I mean, I think I'd be okay with it. But Green Lantern would probably be number one. And for an all-time favorite of mine, it'd probably be To Kill a Mockingbird. Those would be my two.
All right, good. Scott, what about you?
Before I answer, let me preface. This past Sunday at Easter, I was at my mother's, and we were watching we were flipping channels, and Ben-Hur was on, and it was right at the chariot scene, the original. Notice I had to say that, because you'd never think that there was another one, but there was. And I'm watching, and I think to myself, you know, this was – somebody made a remake of this. And my sister looked at me and said, they did? I'm like, yeah, I don't know, like 8 years ago or something. I said to myself, why would you have to remake this? Like, not to get into a dissertation on this, because this is a great question, Andy, mm-hmm. and one that we could talk about for hours and hours. I thought you were going to say something completely different, Sean, when you said, I read this book in school and then I saw the movie. You know what I think? Even though Coppola did the original and the cast of the movie is outstanding,
Outsiders.
I would not mind seeing a new Outsiders.
Yeah. Yep.
Now the original Outsiders is fucking amazing.
Well, yeah. I mean, it is. That's interesting. I didn't think about that.
But I mean, that would be an interesting, because there's a decent amount of current actors now that I think could fit that role. Mm-hmm.
Good one.
Another one that I think could be refreshed. There was another 80s one that was on my mind that I can't think of. It's not enough one that would offend anybody. I got one. They made a sequel, which sucked, so that doesn't count. But I would not mind, depending who plays who, a refresher of Dirty Dancing.
They already did that, didn't they?
No, did they? They did a sequel.
Yeah, I think they did a remake on a made-for-TV movie on it.
Oh, yeah.
Did they really?
Yeah. Oh, it was the shit. Yeah.
Oh, well, never mind that. Okay. Untouchables? Do we have enough time? Andy knows the first one I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any of the Mafia movies.
Exactly. Well, I was about to say, Sean, I dare some millennial twat bag to try to remake The Godfather. I dare you. I'll cut your fucking hands off. Leave it alone.
Or Goodfellas, or Casino.
Or Goodfellas, or Godfather Part II,
yes.
Or Lawrence of Arabia. Like, for instance, okay, Andy, here's interesting. What you were talking about, like why would the Ten Commandments, or why would Lawrence of Arabia, or Dr. Zhivago, why would they have to be remade? What is wrong with that version that needs to be refreshed now? Why? I'm not saying that. I'm not calling you out on it. I'm asking you, because you were talking about like you're trying to get your daughter into older movies or whatever. Why the hell does Lawrence of Arabia have – why does Ben-Hur have to be remade?
No, they
it's
don't.
It's Charlton fucking Heston, for Christ's sakes. No. I mean,
The problem too is that they're not. It's hard for them to be seen. Like Lawrence of Arabia is a much different experience on the big screen as it is watching at home. Ben-Hur is the same way. So I mean, Cleopatra. It took me three or four fucking nights to get through Cleopatra. You know, but there are some. What I was trying to say, like some movies that were like, but you know what? With maybe like you know a little. The filmmaking today, maybe, you know, different director, or there's a director that's perfect for that. Maybe they could take a movie that was so-so and remake it. Some Like It Hot, they shouldn't fucking touch. You know?
Do you want me to answer why they're remaking classics?
Well, because nobody has original ideas.
Depends on the answer, Lee.
No. Do you want the answer? Because there's an easy answer.
I have that too, but I'd like to hear your answer.
All right, go ahead, Lee. It's your show, man.
Don't depress me.
Here.
Oh, well, yeah, that's the easiest.
I mean, that's the only reason they're making this shit again, is to get money.
Yes.
No, well, that's why anybody does anything.
This is Hollywood just completely misunderstanding their audience, and they do this all the time. All the time. They just think about it. Let's do it. It's a cash grab.
Yeah.
Like, think about it. I'll even go current movie, like movie in the last 25 years. I won't even mention a movie from like the 70s or the 60s, because if you remake The Godfather, you're losing your fucking hands.
Yeah, no one's going to do that.
Could you imagine in 2038 somebody goes, you know what I'd like to remake? Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, God.
Fuck you. Get a grip. Yeah. No one should. That's one guy who should never have any of his movies remade is Tarantino.
It's a crime he's never won an Oscar.
I agree with 100%
too. I thought he was a shoo-in this year, but you know.
But
no, it's a crime. It's because the Academy hates him. Hollywood hates him.
So here's my take on the remakes. So I discovered this with my own children, and you brought up the Ghostbusters and how they like the newer one better. Mm-hmm. I think if you go back like to the older movies and the way they act in those movies versus how they act now, the acting is very different. You know, it's more methodical acting, more, I don't know, just more rehearsed. And now it feels a little bit more. So the kids today and the millennials like the more normal approach versus the solid acting because they're crisp and precise. And I think that's why the older movies, that they're all remaking all these older movies to get the newer generation to go watch some of these movies that they won't watch back then because they can make a profit of it. So at the end of the day, it is about the money. Yeah. That's my
opinion. I mean, there are two remakes I refuse to ever spend one second of my life watching. That is Gus Van Sant's shot-for-shot remake of Psycho. What the fuck?
What a tragedy that was.
And that Manchurian Candidate with Denzel. Love Denzel, but no! That movie, I saw that movie in a senior high school film class. That fucked me up, that movie.
Well, creepy Angela Lansbury, like, after seeing her as Jessica Fletcher, and then she's like creepy, gropey pervert Jessica Fletcher, is fucking mind-blowing. Yes. It really is.
That movie, like, literally blew my mind when I saw it, you know, so that's untouchable.
There's so many movies that are untouchable. We could spend all night talking about untouchable ones because there's just so many of them.
But like, what are some of those lesser movies that like they're okay? You know, like will success spoil Rock Hunter? That's the name, right? That's a Tony Randall movie. It's funny, but it's all right. You know, movies that like were okay, but they could have done better. You know, that's kind of.
I got pissed off when they remade Battlestar Galactica. So
yeah, I did too.
I was furious.
Sean, I'm looking forward to the new Dune movie. That'll be good.
No, fuck that. I don't want to see that either.
I didn't like the new Blade Runner, and I had just.
I hated it.
I finally saw the original. And I thought it was good. The second one was just loud and long. I was just like,
what? Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a remake. It's a sequel.
Well, yeah.
Harrison Ford is in it.
Yeah.
Blade Runner, the final cut version of the Blade Runner is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
There's a certain version of it that you got to watch. It's pretty awesome.
Right.
But you know what's funny? Can I to get back to the quickly? Did Lee answer yet? He probably didn't. But
no, he's. I think he's chomping at the.
Sorry, I've been
there.
Cutting you off all night. So
horror movies are the easiest.
Yeah.
Ones to, like I can't believe. I mean, I'm not offended that Halloween pretty much got done like 9 times. I love the original Halloween.
What if they did The Exorcist, though? How would you feel about that?
Depends on the cast.
Oh, I don't know.
Because here's the thing with the original Exorcist. In the defense of whoever would attempt to remake it, literally everybody in that movie except Max von Sydow was a newcomer. Even Ellen Burstyn was a relative newcomer. I think she had just done Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, but I mean, obviously Linda Blair was never in anything, and I forgot the actor that played the other priest. Now, having said that, they never should. I just watched. I have the box set. Exorcist II: The Heretic is fucking horrible. And I don't say many bad things about George C. Scott movies, but The Exorcist III is boring. Would I be offended at a remake of The Exorcist? Look, they remade The Omen, and the original Omen is awesome. And this Omen with Liev Schreiber is not – it's not terrible. I'm not a huge Julia Stiles fan, and she was okay in the role that Lee Remick was in. So I'll be honest, Sean, if they anybody ever did remake The Exorcist, I probably wouldn't get offended. I probably would watch
it. What Look, about Pet Cemetery? Because the remake of Pet Cemetery was god-awful because the original is tremendous.
I was about to tell you that. I was about to say that. I have the remake. I have the original Pet Cemetery, and that movie's fucking awesome. You're quite right. They remade Carrie.
Yeah, I hate it. The original is phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Yes.
I feel like Stephen King movies are Petri dish. I could eventually see a remake of Cujo.
Yeah, that wouldn't bug me. That'd be fine.
Yeah. Salem's Lot. Well, Salem's Lot was never a theatrical movie. That was a TV movie. I have that on Blu-ray. They remade The Fog. And their Fog remake is terrible.
I feel like Firestarter could be remade and no one would care, but I don't think anyone's dying to watch that.
I can't believe no one's remade Poltergeist. That's one that I could see easily being remade.
They did.
Did they?
Yeah, there's a remake. It came out. I don't know. Do we lose Andy and Lee? Is it like the Scott and Sean show now?
Sean didn't get to talk much in the first segment.
I'm getting my time in now, but yeah, they did remake it.
Leave the floor, Jerry.
Anyway. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Hey, Lee, you're up.
Hey. You're tuned to WLEE Radio. This is Lee coming to you live. The Twitchers.
So I'm
going to start with my Untouchable remake, which is an easy one for me. It's Back to the Future. but it does bring up an interesting point. So you could not make Back to the Future. You cannot remake that movie today, but the concept would be awesome to see within the movie today. So again, this is one of those things, like when you look at the movie like Avatar, which was Dances with Wolves, but it's not Dances with Wolves, right? So Back to the Future is an iconic film to me. You cannot remake it with the same characters, although I do love time travel movies, and I do often find myself wondering, like, if they made Back to the Future today, if he went back 30 years, he'd be back in 1990. Which is always something to it'd be funny, because that would start after Back to the Future took place, right? So I always think that things like that are funny. I love time travel films. I wouldn't mind someone exploring the idea of making a similar type film, but you can never remake Back to the Future 1, 2, or 3 to me. They are sacred to me films. Now, thank you. When it gets to things to be remade, I have three, okay? Ironically, and I'll start with kind of like the one that probably nobody thinks about. It's the Untouchables. I wouldn't mind seeing that movie remade. The original was phenomenal, with Kevin Costner. But that's like one of those movies. They could redo that today, and I wouldn't mind seeing it. But with that said, there's just no need or draw to redo it today. The next two I have are, I think, ones that I'd love to see redone. One of them is, anyone who went to broadcasting school or works in broadcasting has seen this. I think this is a film that would be very pertinent today.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Perfect. Yeah, it's Network.
Network.
Right?
Yep.
Network. Yep. You know, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. You could hear that right now. And the best part is, yeah, it doesn't even matter politically where anyone stands. This movie speaks to a larger purpose with television and broadcasting and media. And I can't think of a better movie to come out today. That even does the same. It could literally be a remake of that movie and would work today. If anything, that movie prophesies where we're at today. Now, my last pick. By the way, if you haven't seen Network, go watch Network.
Oh, please
and
do.
If you want to follow up, go watch Broadcast News. But Network is an iconic film for anyone that works in media and television and broadcasting, and it's one of those movies that'll change the way you think.
Yep.
Right. Now. The last pick I have is a superhero film. Now, it's a very specific superhero film from a very popular superhero or anti-hero, depending on how you want to look at him. And it's Batman Forever. Batman Forever, to me, hear me out here, Okay, because it's that's usually put number three of the original four, if you want to call them that. All right, not including the you know the West Batmans and everything like that. Batman Forever actually had in its heart one of the best Batman storylines that's never told anymore, and it essentially is the duality of Bruce Wayne and Batman. And why they are the way that they are, and that Batman is essentially someone with multiple personality disorder, right? And in the movie, and I always called this a pre-9/11 movie. Like, if you look at cinema pre-9/11 and post-9/11, the tone changed dramatically, right? And Batman Forever suffered from that kind of goofy late 90s, mid 90s, got to make the McDonald's Happy Meal toy and cup kind of. Let's make it silly. But the story is really deep in that movie. If you really watch it, I didn't think Val Kilmer actually did a bad job. But he explains why I choose to be Batman, why it's important that I'm Batman, why Bruce Wayne and Batman exist. And then, yeah, you get the zany villains in the Riddler and Two-Face, obviously, and then Dr. Chase Meridian. But there was a great story there. That was a victim of its time, if you want to look at it that way, that I think you could remake a similar story today about the duality of Bruce Wayne and Batman psychologically that could be a really cool action thriller that I think people would actually buy into. But unfortunately, everyone who makes Batman today is a wuss and just can't seem to figure out the character, which is horrible. Or, you know, the same thing that DC Comics always does, which is let's reintroduce the same 12 villains over and over and over and over again. And it's like, you know, you have a great story there. Like, remake that. But I would have loved to see that movie remade today with a Nolan, you know what I mean? Or, or something like that to explore that. Because I think that would be fantastic and really, really fascinating.
Well, Joel Schumacher effed the franchise up. You know, he should never have been, you know, between that and that piece of shit Batman and Robin.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but like, here's the thing. It's like Spider-Man 3, right? Like, Sony shoved that down Raimi's throat. It's like, listen, you have to have three villains and you have to do this storyline, this story. Here's something about Spider-Man 3 that I was studying a film at the time. I was in postgraduate. And what I found is I watched that movie. If you take Sandman out of Spider-Man 3, I don't know any other movie where this is true. If you cut all the scenes with Sandman, the movie still makes sense. Now think about what I'm saying. I'm cutting out a major character in the film, and the movie still makes sense.
Hmm. Wow.
That's devastating if you're a writer. Andy, you know what I'm talking about. It's like devastating. Yes. It means you've written a worthless waste of pages, right? Not to mention what you sacrifice with Venom in that film, you know, what you sacrifice with the Goblin in that film, which were really actually really strong villains, then they could have been fine. And again, this is at a time, this is before the MCU. It's a victim of its time where the movie studios are like, make it bigger and make it stronger and more villains. And it's like, that's you didn't need that. Nobody needed that, you know? And the MCU obviously figured out how to perfect long-storm storytelling in comic films. But yeah, like Batman Forever, Spider-Man 3. I mean, there's other. I mean, Superman 4. You know, the quest for peace.
Oh, that should just never have been made.
don't you talk about Christopher Reeve that way? No, but you're right, right?
Like, I love Superman.
I'd love to see Network remade above all. I think that there's never been a movie that there's a more pertinent time to remake something than that movie. It would be appreciated if it was done right. It would really hit a nerve if you could really talk to the masses in a non-political party way. Do you know what I mean? If you could do that movie as well as they did it then, I think that's something that would be super welcome today.
Yeah. All right. Great stuff. All right, so our final...
Yes, and this is WLEE Radio.
Our final question...
Here's Rush.
Ski guys. All right, so our final question tonight is, we talked a lot about nerd stuff, geek stuff, if you will. But what is your dream collectible? Now, it could be a Lego set, it could be a figure or whatever. You know, you want to shout out a few answers, more than one. Go ahead. Scott, you know, now this is something you don't have. Maybe something you've had your eye on. Maybe you're like, oh, it's a little too pricey. I can't justify it. But, you know, say, you know, you had an extra coin in your pocket and, you know, you were going to splurge on yourself. What would it be? Scott, start with you.
That's a good one. Probably the Lego Millennium Falcon.
Yes.
Yeah. Lego Millennium, because I had the original Kenner Millennium Falcon in 1981, and it's the greatest. And I've said this in a previous show; it's the greatest Christmas gift I ever got in my life. Mm-hmm. I think I said it to you, Lee. but the Lego Falcon, yeah. And I think it's like $250 or $275 or some nonsense.
Yeah, it's quite pricey.
It's quite pricey. Maybe the Lego Death Star. Mm-hmm. Did they do a Lego Death Star?
Yeah, Nate drops. In Spider-Man.
Yes.
Homecoming, yeah.
Yep. It's devastating.
Yeah, she went, oh! It was like when he dropped it. You know how much hours they spent on that?
Those are my two. The Lego Falcon and the Lego Death Star.
All right. Sean, what about you?
I'm Mr. Nostalgia. For me, it's stuff that I had as a kid that I don't have anymore that I wish I did. Like, you know, we were talking earlier about the old superhero stuff with the cartoons, but I love the superheroes and the dolls growing up that you actually had to snap on costumes to them. Mm-hmm. So you like
with the rubber that connected their arms together.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So I had a bunch of those.
Twisted Toy Fair Theater guys. Oh,
yes. So. Yeah. I had those and I don't have them anymore, but I love collecting stuff like that. Like G.I. Joe, Star Wars. I had all this stuff when I was a kid and I let all that go, and I wish to God I still had that today, and I don't. So if I had my dream, that would be getting those things back and still having them and keeping them because those were so awesome.
Sean wants to get outside the box because I agree. I would love my Falcon back and my my Boba Fett Slave One and my X-Wing and my Vader TIE Fighter.
The Land Speeder. The freaking Land Speeder.
The Land Speeder wheels.
I mean, come on.
My Han Solo Blaster.
Yes. Yes, the original TIE Fighter. You know,
TIE Fighter.
Yeah.
Fuck, I killed him.
All the original Star Wars things are unbelievable, and I wish I never got rid of them.
Yeah. Y-Wing Fighter.
Yep. Fuck. Lee.
Great answer.
Lee, what about you?
Yeah, so I've got two. One of them is more of a funny one, but I've always wanted a Han Solo frozen in carbonite refrigerator.
Do they have such a thing?
It exists. It's not something you can buy though. I'm pretty sure someone custom made it, but like the door opens and it's Han and carbonite, and it's just you open it, and it's the freezer.
It's fucking amazing.
I know, right? So that's number one. They actually, I do not have that.
I don't want to interrupt, but they had a thing. They were selling. I think it was at a toy show or maybe it was at Galaxy's Edge or something. But you could get yourself frozen in carbonite, like a figure of yourself.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds fun, too.
That's awesome.
Anyway, sorry, Lee.
No, you're fine. So that's the first one. The second one is actually something I'm proud to say I'm in the process of doing. So I've never been a big collectible guy. I mean, I have plenty of them, but like I've never had the ability to really spend money. I can never justify spending money on big collectibles. But you know, one thing I did do, and I was able to justify this because I'm doing it with my son, is Eagle Moss Collectibles. And I'm not trying to shout them out as a sponsor or anything like that, but they did this brilliant thing where
exactly
they do this.
About.
Yeah, it's a build your own DeLorean. Okay.
Sure.
Yep. Okay, and the way this thing works, and it's brilliant, all right, is they send you sets every month, pieces to the DeLorean, and it comes with the Back to the Future collectible kind of magazine book, and then there's instructions, and you slowly build up this. I think it's 1 to 16 DeLoreans. It's pretty big. I mean, it's not small when it's finished. I've always loved the DeLorean. I've always wanted to drive a DeLorean. Like that's just been one of my pop culture things that I've loved since I was a kid. And I'm building the DeLorean, and it's a really intricate build. It's not simple. With my son, it's cool because I'm introducing him to the franchise. We actually have a Back to the Future like kids book that does the whole story in a kids book form, and like it's been special. And like the thing is, like I said, unlike binge watching, I didn't think I'd like this because it's slow, but I'm actually enjoying that it comes a little bit at a time, and you know, it's not rammed down your throat, and you just kind of like you build it as you go, and it's a project that I get to come back to. And I think when it's done, it's going to be a pretty cool collectible to have the Back to the Future DeLorean that lights up, and you know, I can say I built that. You know, I built the DeLorean, so I'm looking forward to continuing down that process. And it's a long process. I think there's over 100 mailings. And to be fair, it's also it's affordable. Like, it's not a break the bank type thing. I mean, A, because you're paying a little bit at a time, but it's not expensive to the point of like, wow, I really wasted a lot of money on this. I mean, it's exactly what it would cost if you just bought it built already. So it's special to me. I love doing it. I love that I can share it with my son. And I would have with my daughter if she was older. She's only three. I want to shout out Eagle Moss Collections Collectibles because they really have some cool things there. And I know you guys are wrestling fans. They have some cool WWE stuff too. I mean, it's a cool thing. I'm glad I found them.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
They're doing another – hold on a second. I just want to get this out. They have another one too. Tech told me about that, by the way, Andy, okay. The DeLorean thing. There's another one, Lee, they're doing too. Is it the Death Star? No, they're doing another one like that.
Star Trek. They do a lot of different things.
By the way,
the build I don't know, but like yeah. I know the DeLorean was the one build that they did, and like I'm really enjoying it.
I'll have to look. By the way, Andy, all of Tech's ships,
mm-hmm.
Eagle Moss.
Oh, they're doing Ecto-1. They're doing Ecto-1.
Ecto-1. That's what it is. Yeah. It's Ecto-1. Anyway, Lee, a buddy of ours who is going to be debuting on this feed very soon, that we work with. He collects a ton of the miniature Star Trek ships. Those are all Eagle Moss.
Yeah.
The Eagle Moss does great stuff.
They really do. And like I said, I've really enjoyed the process. And they do it right. Like, you get gifts with it. Like, one of the first gifts you get is like an out-of-time license plate from California. Like, with like the California 1985, 1986 thing on the license plate.
That's awesome. Nice.
Yeah, they give you like a collector's binder, a display case, and they come a little bit at a time. So like, you don't get them all at once. You get a T-shirt. I mean, it's just cool the way they've done it. And like, I'm at a point in my life I can just, you know, justify doing it. This is just really cool. And like, again, I sent you guys the link. You can see like, it's a really intricate build. I can't stress that enough. Like, it's not cheap. I mean, it's like you're building the damn DeLorean. You know what I mean? I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah,
it is.
I actually have an out-of-time
license plate. Now I have all the time in the world, so there you go.
Mine's a cheap out-of-time license plate because it was a souvenir from Universal Studios Florida in 1994. But for me, I have a lot of collectibles because it was kind of therapy for me for a while. It's no surprise, I am divorced, and when I was going through my divorce and my marriage was whatever, I found figure hunting became something, and I'm OCD. I've completed, so I have a lot of wrestling superstars. I have Marvel Legends, almost the complete Muppet figure series, including the Swedish Chef Kitchen, the USS Swine Pork. I have several things, but for me, my current right now, I have a collection on my desk at work of all their Lee, we've chatted about this on Messenger.
Oh, yeah.
About
I remember this.
Their little, like, you know, Matchbox cars, but they're all from TV and movies. So I have like four DeLoreans because they're all different ones. I have the one from the first one, the one from the second one, the flying one from everyone from three. I have the Biff's car with the manure on it. You know, I have the A-Team van, all kinds of stuff. So I was watching Stripes yesterday, and I'm like, oh, I have the all-terrain whatever camper that can kill everybody. You know, I have the old-school van. I mean, DC cab. I mean, it's insane what they've come out with. And since Toys R Us has gone out of business, it's harder to find them. I actually have to go online. But like, but what I'm really looking forward to is that, and I have some Lego sets. Like, I just picked up Impulse Buy. I bought a Flintstones Lego set for $60, I think, the other day. I just happened to see it like sitting there lonely on a shelf, and I had to give it a new home. But like, I love stuff that, like, you know, figures of things I loved as a kid, like the cartoons. I remember I took a picture of something in my room, and Sean, Eagle Eye Sean, pointed out, oh, I love your Dynamite and Blue Falcon figures. I'm like, not a lot of people will know that. I don't think my kids even know who they are.
I think it's the age and the time. Yeah. But Blue Falcon and Dynamite are fantastic.
And yeah. What you didn't see, though, is because I was taking a picture, I got one of those arcade one-ups with a gift, anniversary gift from my company. I had a stipend, and I was able to get an arcade one-up of Street Fighter II. And but behind it was one of my prize collections is my Herculoids figures.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I remember $100.
Wow.
They were in three different sets, about $30 each. I bought it from a website. I don't know if they're still around, Entertainment Earth.
Yes,
but,
they are.
But I was buying a lot of stuff on there. I mean, I have Hanna-Barbera figures. I have a complete Goonies set of figures. So for me, like, you know, it's just looking at that kind of just brings me back to like my childhood and memories of watching those movies or shows. So that's kind of what I do. And try, my kids aren't that into it, thank God, because it's a slippery slope to fall down. But, you know, it's a lot of fun stuff. So that's going to bring us to the close of our pop culture section. But we're not done, guys. How I like to end the shows is with a rapid fire round. So I'm going to throw out, you've all been on the show before, so you know what it is. Lee, this is not Star Wars related, but but actually, no, there is one that you might actually, you know, could say is Star Wars related. That's at the end of the round. So I'm going to throw out two options, and you're just going to say which one you prefer. You can give some reasoning, up to you. But so we're going to start with Scott. First one, IHOP or Cracker Barrel?
Cracker Barrel.
All right. Sean, what do you say?
1,000% Cracker Barrel. Give me that chicken fried steak.
Hell yeah. Chicken and rice, baby.
Lee, what are you going to say?
It's a close one for me, but I got to go IHOP just because, you know, my wife and we dated and we went there a lot. So I have a lot of nostalgia with IHOP. Plus, I love some pancakes.
I mean, I would go Cracker Barrel mostly, but if I'm hammered, IHOP. There are many memories of ending up in IHOP at like 2 a.m. after having quite a few beverages that night. All right, Sean, when you go to the movies, Snow Caps or Junior Mints?
Junior Mints.
Okay. Lee?
Popcorn. No, Junior Mints.
Scott?
Raisinets.
That's not one of the options.
Junior Mints.
All right. Does anyone even eat Snow Caps?
I don't think so.
Such a feeling.
Do they even make them anymore?
Yeah, they do. My daughter loves them, actually.
I've never met anyone or seen anyone ever eat one. So.
I mean, neither. Win either.
No, you can get them at stores for like $1. You know, they charge $5 at the movies, but you get them at like Walmart or Stop and Shop for like $1. So my daughter likes them.
I'll have to try it. I don't think I've ever tried one.
Yeah, they're fine. Okay, Lee, G.I. Joe or Transformers? Now, we're talking about the cartoons, not the movies.
Cool. God, that's a tough one, Andy. Transformers for me.
Scott.
You know why he does this part of the show, Lee? This is the I'm tired of everybody picking on me, so I'm going to fuck with them all section of the show. That's what he does.
It's also for also for the Facebook page.
You're such a dick.
That's not the first time I've heard that today. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. Or from me. No.
Yeah, that's true.
shit. And I'm looking at both of them, too. I have both complete series on my shelf. Oh, I fucking hate your guts. Transformers. very close though.
Sean,
it is very close.
Can I take the cop out and go both based on the Marvel Limited series in the mid 80s?
You know what's funny? Sean,
Andy, we're rebelling here. We're rebelling here.
Sean, are you talking about the four comic book run?
The limited series.
I actually own that. That's the one set of comics.
Well, Steve, there you go. I just won.
But no, I'm not accepting that answer.
Shit. It's so hard. You know what? I got to go. Probably Transformers just because the movie makes it so fantastic. So.
Who knows? I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Scott, when you go to the casino, slots or tables?
Tables.
Yeah. Sean?
Tables, poker all the way.
All right.
Yep.
Lee?
Hell yeah, babe.
This is what's funny. I'm better at tables, but I do the slots.
It depends on my budget. You know, if I want to like try to maybe play longer and low risk, I'll go slots. But
I don't have the attention span for slots. tables keep me engaged.
All right, here's a callback. Sean, AC/DC or Black Sabbath?
AC/DC.
Say AC/DC or Rush.
AC/DC.
All right, Lee.
AC/DC.
All right, Scott.
AC/DC.
All right, cool. All right, Lee, we're going to talk about a couple of pizza toppings. Pepperoni or sausage?
Pepperoni.
All right. Scott?
Being a New Havener, this is a very specific question based on where I'm going.
Is it crumbled or is it sliced?
Oh, it's crumbled. No, it's crumbled.
Last meal. You must choose.
Oh, if it's the last meal, it's neither of those toppings. It's the bacon and onion and peppies. Pepperoni.
All right. Sean.
Chosen wisely.
Tough one. I love both of those.
Me too.
I'm going with sausage.
All right. Scott. Whose turn is it? Scott, yeah. Lethal Weapon or Die Hard?
Your turn, Andy.
Yeah, shut up, Lee.
Andy, these are brutal tonight, man. Yeah. Jesus.
No, he really is.
Oh, it's not
he
as really easy is. As a Ryan Reynolds, Chris Hemsworth debate.
No, these are brutal.
All right, Scott, Lethal Weapon or Die Hard?
Oh, Die Hard.
Yeah. Sean?
Best Christmas movie ever.
You know, I love both those movies, and I got to go with Die Hard, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lee?
We're excluding anything after the third movie for both franchises, correct?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, Die Hard.
Well, we're not looking at franchise, just the original.
The original? No, Die Hard. Okay, that's not so hard. Die Hard.
Hans Gruber.
All right. This is a great one to start with, Sean. A goal line stand or a deep bomb in football?
Deep bomb, because I'm going to say deep bomb because it sounds pornographic and right up my alley. So we'll go with deep bomb.
All right. Lee.
No, it's a deep bomb. It's exciting no matter how you spread it. I mean, if you do a goal line stand, it's just somebody's just screwed up.
Yeah, all right. Scott.
Whatever wins me a free triple lupa. Which I had one last week and was quite delicious. Deep bomb. I mean, a goal line stand is fun. A deep bomb is fun at any point in a game. A goal line stand is at its best in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
kind of like
games on the line. Yeah,
exactly.
Situation.
Yeah.
All right, Lee, Kurt Russell or Kevin Costner?
Kevin Costner. I think, they both play the same person in every movie they've ever been in, which is a great, you know, like they don't do roles. It's just the role adapts to them. But in my life, Kevin Costner's had more of an impact.
Mm-hmm. Scott.
Kurt Russell.
All right. Sean.
Yeah, I got to go with Kurt Russell, too, because he had early impact from the Disney movies to the career he's had now. So I got to go with him.
All right.
And he was in two of John Carpenter's best movies, Escape from New York, The Thing.
Thing, yep.
All right. Okay, so now this is one where you could make it Star Wars related if you like. Scott, pilot or gunner?
Pilot.
All right. Sean?
It's a ship that made a Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs.
Pilot.
Yeah. Lee?
Yeah, gunners are like red shirts in Star Trek. You got to be the pilot.
Tremendous comparison.
That's true. I mean, yeah.
All right.
Great kid. Don't be cocky. I mean, come on. That's an easy one.
All right. Awesome job, guys. That's going to bring it into the rapid fire. It's going to bring it into the episode. But before we go, let's talk about everybody's social media presence, what you got to plug. We're going to talk about Place of Nation. Sean, let's start with you. You got anything to plug?
I'm on Facebook. Just did the Place to Be podcast for the first time, which was awesome in the latest episode. And do have a Laugh-In Theater out there. That's great with Andy and a couple of other folks. And I do have another upcoming, well, maybe two more upcoming over the next week or so, but don't know if they're 100% happening yet, but should have some stuff happening. And then I'll just keep whoring myself out like I end everything that people ask me, what are you doing next? I'm just going to say, I keep being a whore. So.
All right, Lee, what do you got to plug and direct people to?
Alrighty. If you like what you've heard here today, you might also enjoy my other podcast, Geeks Who Like Sports, wherever podcasts are sold. I am actually the host of that show.
You're the co-host.
Ray is really the host of that show. I do a great podcast with my best friend called Geeks Who Like Sports, and we legit talk about geekdom and sportdom every single week, and we have a blast doing it. We actually just hit our one-year mark in our last episode, so I'm really proud of us for that. And if you're a big hockey fan, I also have a communication network called We Live Hockey. It's welive.hockey if you're looking for the website. We do a podcast there and lots of hockey content from around the net. And before we're done here, Andy, I actually do want to just thank you for having me on this show. I always enjoy it. I love speaking with you and everyone here today. It's a wonderful time. And really, it's been, almost 3 hours here, and I still feel like we could keep going. So yeah. I love being on your shows, and I appreciate you as a person and having us on today. Thanks for actually being the host of the show. I can see the title back to you.
Thank
good
you.
Sir.
Thank you, Lee. All right. Scott, what you got to plug? All right, I can go cook an egg, right?
Do you have another hour? I think what you should have done, and I love Sean to death, so I know he'll chuckle at this. What you should have done is one of the rapid fires was Dumbledore or Voldemort.
Ooh.
Well, Voldemort could Lee a little backstory. Sean hates Harry Potter.
That's the joke.
I would have said Dumbledore because he died first.
Spoilers!
No, sorry, my bad.
Great. Really, Andy, if nobody's seen it by now, seriously.
It's a joke. Jesus Christ. But, talking about me not playing K-Fape.
Again, Voldemort could not take over a high school.
See what happens, Lee, when these shows get over 3 hours, it gets punchy. So, all right. Well, now we're going to go another hour with all my plugs. No. Place to Be Wrestling Network is my feed, and it's got a bunch of great programming. As mentioned, Mr. Kid was on with JR and I on the most recent episode of the Place to Be podcast. Let's see. We'll have a new episode of PTB NXT actually dropping tomorrow. Newest episode of Body Pressure Luck, Mr. Atherton, right? Is it this week?
That's dropping Friday, yep.
The Doctor and I with the newest NWA Saturday special. We have an interesting topic we're going to talk about this week. The ups and downs of the NWA championship in the last 30 years after it split off from what would become WCW. This weekend, we'll have a new episode of the Special Relations Podcast with our three mates from the other side of the pond. Next Monday, next episode of the Place to Be Podcast, myself and JR will welcome Pete Winston, the October 13th, 1990 Saturday night's main event. And a bunch of other stuff next week. New Row 1, Seat 1, a new With This Ring, new main event, all sorts of other fun stuff. I'm on Twitter at PTB Podfather. I'm on this show, this episode. Andy and I, of course, with Mr. D'Amato and The Doctor with The Year in Pop. I have to say, please check out the last episode. I have to say, Andy, 1981 might have been one of our best.
Yep.
I thought that episode was fantastic. And I'm looking forward to 1982 coming up in a month or so. And I kept mentioning my friend who owns all the Star Trek ships. I'm not going to say who he is. I'll introduce him when we do it. But we will be doing, as part of the resurgence, if you will, of the Place to Be Nation pop feed, my five-part series on the legacy of the James Bond franchise. And we're going to break it down by guy. And because we thought that No Time to Die would already be out, but it's not. It'll be coming out in November. I joke with my mom, like, Mom, I was going to take it for Mother's Day, and now I'll take it for your birthday like I do every other James Bond film that always comes out in November. So, yeah, check it out. Place to Be Wrestling Network, the Place to Be Nation pop feed, of course, that Andy procures. And, of course, our two affiliate feeds. Andy, I'll just get this out of the way for us.
Sure.
Of course, the wonderful Jenny Position, purveyed by our girl Jennifer Smith, all of her great shows. And, of course, the new North-South Podcast Connection, JR and Chad Campbell. Chad's got a couple of great pod blasts out right now. And, of course, your usual old school favorites, the ECW three-way dance, Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, No Holds Barred, Wrestling Warzone, all the great stuff JR and Chad do, and Aaron. So that's over on that feed, too. So plenty of podcast fun for you on those four feeds. You don't have to go anywhere else. There you go.
Awesome. As Scott mentioned, a new episode of Body Pressure Luck is game is taking place Thursday night. Our five-time champion, I believe, Ryan Everett, has two new challengers. Let's see if he can continue his undefeated streak. We'll find out when that drops on Friday. That is also as hosted by Justin Rosero and Jordan Duncan. I'm the third man in the booth with those guys. Also on the wrestling feed coming up, probably dropping in early May, is new episodes of Great Debate Wrestling and the next episode of The Evolution Of, which we'll be taking a look at. I'm not announcing yet who the subject is, but one of a lot of people's all-time favorite wrestlers. And we're going to be breaking it down with a super fan, much like we did on the initial episode where we talked about Triple H with Mr. Skull. Over here on the pop feed, yes, we are going through some transitions, some shows, new shows coming hopefully soon. But right now, check out Diamond Conversations. That's our baseball show that we have that drops every Wednesday. We have – it was a thing on TV looking at obscure, short-lived Not So Good Television. That drops every Tuesday. Check out episodes of Laugh in Theater proper. The last episode was Mr. Jordan Duncan. We watched Tommy Boy. And Lee, your co-host, Ray, is dropping by the theater next week. And we are going to watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So I'm really looking forward to... yes, that's why I picked him. And also, I could maybe do a little preview here. Lee, you talked about that movie quite a bit. You're going to be stopping by the theater. We're going to time it, because believe it or not, it's the 35th anniversary of Back to the Future. So you're going to be joining
Great
me.
Great Scott!
I probably will not say a single word that episode. But
Richard Marty, the Libyans!
I'm really looking forward to deep diving into actually one of my favorite movies. I am not the expert that you are, but I look really forward to watching that movie with you.
So much of that movie that people don't know about. It's amazing.
Also, check, like Scott said, Year in Pop, 1981, just dropped last week. Great episode. Yes, we're really getting into our wheelhouse, I think. With you, me, the Doctor, and Mr. D'Amato, where this is our formative years now. We're all, starting to enter double digits in our ages. And, D'Amato's already been there for quite a while, but, I love you, Johnny. So check that out. And also, since we're this whole current situation, we're doing extra episodes. We're calling them Laugh in Isolation Theater. And those are just fun group watches of silly movies. We've done Naked Gun. We've done Naked Gun 2.5. We've done She's Out of My League, that you want to talk about. And a couple of the next ones, we have Police Academy on tap. And then after that, we're probably going to do Just Friends. So check those out. Those are hopefully things that will take your mind off what's going on for a couple of hours. Watch the movie along with us. Have a lot of fun. Don't forget to check out PlayStation.com. New articles, new writers. We have a couple of writers coming on board, so you should be seeing their work in the upcoming weeks as well. Check out all of our Facebook pages for a lot of our shows, PlayStation Nation. Also, thank you everyone who participated in our latest tournament that just concluded today. The PTBN's greatest sports logo of 2020 won by the Chicago Bulls logo. Great job. Also, shout out to the runner-up San Jose Sharks logo and the third place Las Vegas Raiders and the fourth place New York Mets. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad everybody had a good time and everybody participated. Next one's coming very soon, within the next few weeks, hopefully, the greatest junk food tournament. So your Doritos and Fritos fans, Oreos, Chips Ahoy, Slim Jims, whatever you like, those hopefully will all be in there, and everybody's going to have a lot of fun, spark a lot of great conversation. But for now, I just want to say thank you to my great panel tonight, Scott Criscolo, Sean Kidd, and Lee Elias. I'm Andy Athan. Thank you for joining us on Great Debate, and we'll check you on the next episode. Take care, everybody.
Okay. Fucking okay.
Oh God.